Border at the Cyprus Mail told LBC.
A small drone has impacted the airfield at Akrotiri and the agencies are responding to it. So far I've been told there have been no casualties.
In Iran, tears and fears. Tears from those mourning the death of the Ayatollah. Fears for those brave enough to get out there and celebrate. We'll hear from Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper-Lapert later in this hour. But the situation in London?
Thousands of British Iranians filled the streets of Finchley over the weekend, a part of North London often referred to as Little Tehran. I'm LBC's Henry Riley speaking with members of the Iranian community here.
Plus, a mission launched to bring back about 94,000 people in the region. News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Keir Starmer says he's agreed to US requests to use British bases to attack Iranian missile sites. The Prime Minister says the UK will not be taking part in offensive action, but the move is to save British lives. The government previously refused Washington's request to use bases for potential strikes on Iran. Keir explained his reasoning in a video released by Downing Street last night.
We have taken the decision to accept this request, to prevent Iran firing missiles across the region, killing innocent civilians, putting British lives at risk. The basis of our decision is the collective self-defence of long-standing friends and allies.
Shortly after Keir's announcement, officials confirmed that a Royal Air Force base in Cyprus was targeted in a suspected drone strike. LBC has been told nobody was injured at RAF Akrotiri, which is used for operations in the Middle East. President Trump has told Americans that combat operations in Iran will continue until his administration's objectives are achieved. He's confirmed three US service members have been killed in action since the joint US-Israeli strikes on Saturday.
We pray for the full recovery of the wounded and send our immense love and eternal gratitude to the families of the fallen. And sadly, there will likely be more before it ends. That's the way it is.
Global oil prices have risen by 10% after at least three ships were attacked near the Strait of Hormuz. The waterway is a crucial trading route on Iran's southern border. Iran has warned ships not to pass through it, which carries about 20% of the world's oil and gas. One other story for you this morning. The Home Secretary says Britain will pay failed asylum seekers more money to leave the country if they cooperate with the system. Shabana Mahmood's expected to use a speech later to outline tougher controls on migration. The new plans are modelled on Danish policy. Ms Mahmood has told LBC's political editor Natasha Clark her changes will improve the system.
To house somebody in asylum accommodation in a hotel, it costs £53,000 a year per person. I think paying more than what we currently do is still going to be considerably less than what we're spending on these people staying in asylum hotels. Well, look, I haven't made any final decisions on what the right sum and the right sort of package will be for our country.
But it could be up to £30,000.
It will be more than what we currently offer.
And you can see and read more on this story on the LBC app. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,910. It closed up 63 on Friday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.13. LBC weather, rain will move east across northern and western areas, dry, mild and sunny. Elsewhere, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears?
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing two savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs and we also do hearing two savers. Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 4 minutes after seven, Monday, March the 2nd, as fears grow that the military conflict between the United States, Israel and Iran will escalate. Fears there, but cheers on the streets of Tehran. Those brave enough come out to celebrate the killing of their supreme leader, the Ayatollah. What is the impact for us back here, aside, of course, from military involvement or military support? Well, it could start to hit us in our wallets and our purses.
A sustained oil price spike could play havoc with the global economy. I'm Christian May from City AM discussing this with Nick shortly.
What should be the level of support from the British government? Do we think they've breached international law? Were we aware of the attack on the Ayatollah prior to, or was that an exclusive US-Israel deal? Many questions for the Foreign Secretary, who will join us later in this hour. And talking of foreigners, there are around 94,000, roughly 94,000 Brits stranded in the region. Matt Rickard.
I was flying to the UK from Thailand when the strikes began in Iran. I'm Matt Rickard, a Brit currently stranded in Abu Dhabi. I'll be speaking to Nick.
And the safety of military personnel hours after Sir Keir Starmer made that address that we played some of it for you earlier. Of course, there's believed drone strike on the RAF base in Cyprus. There are other stories, one of which you've heard briefly. We will come back to it. Britain's to pay migrants more than £3,000 to leave the UK. More details on that later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer stands accused of refusing to condemn the airstrikes on Iran. Is this another U-turn? Consider where he was initially. It's a breach of international law. Now it's a defensive action we're allowed. This is of huge significance, by the way. And we're not making any fun of this because people's lives are being lost and people's lives are at risk. But is it another U-turn? Now, strikes continue to rain down across the Middle East yesterday. Opposition MPs branded Sir Keir feeble for failing to take sides. This was demonstrated on the media round of his senior colleague, the Defence Secretary, John Healey. Speaking with LBC's Lewis Goodall yesterday, the Secretary of State was asked if the British government supported the US attacks on Iran, and he failed to give a coherent answer.
We didn't participate in the strikes on Iran. We share the primary aim, not just of the US, but of allies in Europe and across the Middle East, that Iran should never be allowed to have a nuclear weapon. And my concern now as Defence Secretary is increasingly indiscriminate attacks we've seen from Iran that aren't just hitting military targets, but civilian targets like hotels and airports in countries right across the Middle East.
I understand all of that, of course, and I can understand why that's your primary concern, Defence Secretary, but I suppose my question is just a slightly simpler one, which is, does the British government support what President Trump is doing?
All our actions are defensive actions. All of our actions are consistent with international law. We are first and foremost concerned about the position and the risk to UK citizens and bases.
Pitiful, isn't it? Now, Lewis Goodall continued to try and get an answer to no avail. He wasn't the only one. His Defence Secretary also now on the BBC being asked by Laura Koonsberg if the government backs what the US has done.
Britain played no part in the strikes on Iran. We share, however, the primary aim of all allies in the region and the US that Iran should never have a nuclear weapon.
But do you believe this action was within international law?
Well, we play no part in the strikes. We just didn't participate. And it is for the US to set out the legal basis of the action that it took. Our first focus...
So you don't know if it's legal? You don't have a view as to whether or not these strikes were the right thing to do and within international law?
So it's for the US to explain the legal basis they're operating
but
on.
But other countries have...
They just take us as fools at times, don't they? Now, last night, around 9 o'clock, we heard from the Prime Minister putting this video on social media, confirming the UK has given the US permission to mount defensive airstrikes from British military bases.
The United States has requested permission to use British bases for that specific and limited defensive purpose. We have taken the decision to accept this request, to prevent Iran firing missiles across the region, killing innocent civilians, putting British lives at risk, and hitting countries that have not been involved. The basis of our decision is the collective self-defence of long-standing friends and allies and protecting British lives.
Sir Keir Starmer. Soon you'll hear from Sir Richard Dearlove, who was former head of MI6, and Peter, now Lord Ricketts, former Secretary of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. But first, let's go to one of the cities or the regions affected. Emily Schrader is an American-Israeli journalist joining us from Tel Aviv. Thanks for coming on. Emily, what's the news and what's the mood this morning in Tel Aviv? Good morning to you.
Well, good morning. Great to be with you. Another morning where we were woken up here by incoming ballistic missiles. Sirens rang about 7 a.m. And this follows, of course, 2 days of continuous missile fire that we saw across Israel. Now, here in Tel Aviv, we've had several direct hits here in the area. But not just Tel Aviv. We also saw in Jerusalem yesterday a devastating missile attack in Beit Shemesh, an area close to Jerusalem, where we saw 9 people be killed and 30 more injured when the shelter itself, suffered a direct hit. So these are very dangerous missiles we're dealing with here, and a highly escalated situation on the ground.
How well or otherwise is the Iron Dome functioning, Emily?
Well, so far we've had remarkable interception rates. The missiles which have actually gotten into Israeli airspace, which is a minimal amount, if we're being honest, thanks to, you know, the Patriot missile system and other missile defense on the way between here and Iran. But the new laser that Israel has developed was put into use this morning. They said the results were good. Iron Dome has been highly effective. So we're hopeful it remains that way so that, you know, as many people as possible remain safe.
Emily Schrader, look after yourself. American-Israeli journalist joining us from Tel Aviv, 10 after 7. To Sir Richard Dearlove, who's former head of the British Secret Intelligence Service, MI6, joining me now. To date, how would you characterise the response and the stance of the British government, Sir Richard? Good morning.
Well, I would... the response is... oh, it's twisted. I mean, look, this is the latest chapter in a war which started on the 7th of October, 23, and... government by human rights lawyers, which is what we're suffering in the UK now, is painful when you see them trying to explain the difference between offensive, defensive. We should have been clear-cut from day one and supported the Americans and the Israelis unequivocally.
If you had the opportunity, what question would you ask of the Prime Minister, Sir Richard?
Why he havered and delayed initially, and why he put John Healey in such an awkward position when the moral issue behind this war is absolutely clear, and we should have had the confidence and the conviction, the moral conviction, to know where our national security and defence interests best lied.
What does the best end game look like?
The best end game may take a long time coming, but a more compliant regime in Iran, possibly a completely new regime, largely created by internal forces of opposition to the theocratic regime, which has been so murderous and so ghastly for years.
How do we ensure that Iran doesn't become another Iraq or Afghanistan, Sir Richard?
We can't at this point in time. The problem is when you have had such bloody tyrants ruling a country, it can take an awful long time for the country to recover. It's taken Iraq, 20 years to reach a position where it has a reasonably good functioning democracy. I hope Iran doesn't go down that track. And I don't think it's the Trump intention to completely overthrow the government. What I mean by that is I think we see a new emerging policy in Venezuela, possibly in Cuba, possibly in Iran, where you have a new government or a new group of people governing who are more compliant and easier to deal with. So you avoid that sort of chapter of complete internal breakdown and chaos.
Lastly,
it's difficult to make that judgment at the moment, Nick.
And how long should that interregnum last, Sir Richard?
Look, I really don't know. This is a terrific gamble, and it depends on, as it were, how the Iranians themselves react. I think the best would be if some military group emerged which was prepared to form a different sort of government. Let's see what happens. It is a huge gamble. We all know that.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. Sir Richard Diller, former head of the British Secret Intelligence Service, MI6, 14 after 7. Listen to that, Peter, now Lord Ricketts, who serves as the former permanent secretary of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office and UK National Security Advisor under David, now Lord Cameron. Lord Ricketts, thank you for coming on. We just heard from my previous contributor. It is, quotes, a huge gamble. Is it a gamble worth taking? Morning.
Good morning. It is a huge gamble. And as soon as you use military force, of course, it becomes unpredictable because the other side gets sometimes to drive how things develop, which is rather what's happening with Iran at the moment. I mean, I think two things are true, Nick. One, the Khamenei regime was awful, thuggish and brutal, and the world will be better without it. Two, we've lived under a system of rules since the Second World War where countries do not mount assaults on other countries and kill their leaders, because that way leads to complete international chaos. And so I've been supportive of the government in saying effectively that they are not in support of these strikes. Now they're having to cope with the repercussions, including the missiles coming out from Iran, and Keir Starmer finds himself in a different position. Quite amazing to think, if you think, stop for a moment. 48 hours ago, we were only just hearing about the first American strikes. Now we've got a much wider conflict involving Lebanon, involving the Gulf states, and now even involving Akrotiri and Cyprus. So wars escalate in unpredictable ways, and that's what this government is having to cope with.
Is it a breach of international law?
In my view, the assault was a breach of international law, yes. I mean, international law, which Britain respects, is clear that there has to be an imminent threat before you can take the kind of action that the US and Israel took. I don't think Iran presented that kind of imminent threat. In fact, they were at a weaker position than they'd been for years after the strikes last June and the dismantling of Hezbollah and Hamas. So I do not think it was legal. I think what you heard from John Healey was the government rather wriggling in order to avoid saying that. But I think that was the reality. I think they were right.
Lastly, Lord Ricketts, what course should the government chart now?
Well, I think we've got to try and use all our influence in Washington to get this back from conflict to negotiation. Trump talking about weeks and weeks of further war. Trump is very inexperienced in war. He's only had short, sharp interventions which have come out successfully for him in Iran last June, in Venezuela. Now this is bigger. It's much more dangerous. Closing the Straits of Hormuz will have an impact on all of us in terms of oil prices. The Gulf is very vulnerable to continued Iranian attacks. The longer this goes on, the more dangerous it is. So let's get back to the negotiation, which Iran was involved with when Americans decided to strike. Let's try and get some kind of resolution which will allow the people to build a new government which is much more respectful of their rights. But that has to come from within. You can't change regimes with airstrikes.
Grateful for your time today, sir. Thank you. Lord Ricketts, former permanent secretary to the FCO and UK National Security Advisor. 17 minutes after 7. Just briefly, Lord Ricketts there mentioning President Trump, a little of what he said last night.
Three U.S. military service members have been killed in action. As one nation, we grieve for the true American patriots who have made the ultimate sacrifice.
Tragically, deaths on all sides, people on all sides losing their lives, a suspected drone strike on an RAF base in Cyprus. What should that British position be? Full support? And is it a breach of international law? Foreign Secretary will join us later. LBC News headlines at this time, 7:17, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer says he's agreed to American requests to use British bases to attack Iranian missile sites. The Prime Minister says the UK will not be taking part in offensive action, but the move is to save British lives. Shortly after Sir Keir's announcement, an RAF base in Cyprus was hit by a suspected drone strike. No injuries have been reported. And Donald Trump has told Americans that combat operations in Iran will continue until his administration's objectives are achieved. LBC weather, rain will move east across northern and western areas, dry, mild and sunny elsewhere, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25, anti-clockwise from junction 21 at the M1 to 19 at Watford. It's following an accident and one lane is closed. Two problems on the M4. Firstly, westbound queues between junctions 8, 9 at Maidenhead and 10 at the A329M. That's because of an accident where two lanes are closed. And then westbound, it's very busy at the M25 junction following an accident. Everything's open now, but there are delays from junction 4 at Heathrow. The A13 is still blocked eastbound at the Ferry Lane interchange at Raynham. That's after an accident. And on the underground, the Piccadilly Line can't run between Hatton Cross and Heathrow Airport because of a track problem.
This is LBC.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
At AJ Bell, we believe every customer deserves brilliant service, which is just one reason we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. And we all trust pilots, with their smooth, captainy voices that make you feel like you'd let them land anywhere they like. Sorry, where was I? Right, AJ Bell, rated excellent by sexy pilots. I mean Trustpilot. I'm a flight risk. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
The Philly cheese stack is back at McDonald's and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions and even more cheese. The Philly cheese stack. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary. Subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Little 8721, come to your reactions in just a moment. What should the level of support now be for the United States? Where do you see this going next? Is it a breach of international law? So many questions. When did we know, by the way? I wonder. That US-Israel attack on the Ayatollah. Were we told in advance? That'll give us a clue. Now, the front pages obviously reflect different aspects of the story. A number of them are quite rightly concerned about the roughly 94,000 people who are stranded in Dubai and that main region. If you're there now and you're listening to me, do give me a call if you have family or friends there. UK draws up rescue plan for Britons trapped in Gulf States is the Daily Mail. Stranded, one page there, one word on the front page for the Daily Mirror. Daily Express, 200,000 Brits trapped in Middle East. Let's just take one other. And this is more the position, perhaps on a global footing. The Daily Telegraph saying Britain backs war on Iran. I remind you, the Foreign Secretary with us in approximately, hopefully, half an hour's time. Just give you a quick idea of what's happening globally. The front page of the Jerusalem Post, Iranian missile kills 9. That was, of course, something that the journalist was telling us from Tel Aviv. Very powerful, as often is the case, front page of the New York Post, which is a bit like their Sun, I suppose, in a sense, over there, owned by the same company as well. This is an aircraft taking off from an aircraft carrier. The battle for Iran is the front page of the New York Post. And we rather cleverly have translated or seen what's happening on the social media from Iran as well. I don't have the name for this newspaper or news organisation. Anyway, large funeral ceremony is held in Iran for martyred security personnel is their headline. All right, where does it go now? Grace in Haringey. Hello, Grace. Good morning to you. Where does it need to go now?
Good morning. Well, I feel it's Armageddon. Oh. It is absolute madness. Iran has 90 million people. Trump is a madman. Mm-hmm. And he has destabilized the world. And for ordinary people all over the world, look, I remember 7/7. I was lucky I wasn't on that tube.
You say that he's destabilized the world. How stable would a world be if Iran had nuclear capability?
We would have a chance.
Sorry, I don't understand. We would have a chance. A chance of what?
a chance of negotiation.
Oh,
a
come
chance.
On, Grace. No. This is the Ayatollah is a man who's presided over the killing of tens of thousands of people and the imprisonment of even more. How do you negotiate with that?
Can I just say, if you go back to the invasion of Iraq, the weapons inspectors had not finished their work.
Sorry, let's talk about now, shall we?
Right. Well, he was in negotiations.
And you believe him?
It's not about whether I believe him. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't there. But in a world where you have law, you have diplomacy, you have
Where's
to honour...
Where's the law and diplomacy in Iran for people who get arrested and killed on the streets?
There are 90 million people in Iran.
No, what about... Well, the government admit to killing 5,000. The estimate is more like 40,000. Where's the law and diplomacy for them?
Democracy comes from the root.
Well, you keep saying this. Grace, you keep ignoring the
democracy,
fact...
Democracy, it doesn't
Grace,
work.
You keep ignoring the fact that this unelected government was murdering its own people. Now, am I pretending that this solution is perfect? No, far from it. But you seem to say, oh, well, as long as he says the talks go on, he can continue to murder his people.
No, what I say is that the history of Iran, who put the Shah in power?
1953 was when the United Kingdom got involved and voted out the Prime Minister. That's why it is reported a lot of Iranians, not all, a lot of Iranians have very negative feelings towards the United Kingdom. Yes, you're right.
So they interfered. If they had not done that...
Okay, I see. I don't know why we're going back to 1953. I don't know why we're going back to Iraq. Obviously, you must learn from history. But you either have concerns that, A, this regime is killing its own people, and B, is getting close to nuclear capability, or you just say, let Iran have its nuclear weapons, which I think would be nightmarish, and let them continue to kill their people. But I say again, this is not the perfect solution. But sadly, something had to be done. Grace, thanks for getting started. Lloyd, you'll be the next caller. Now, we need to pick up what's happening in the United States. President Trump warning American people more US troops are likely to lose their lives as he will continue to authorize airstrikes on Iran. He said his military efforts to topple the regime could continue for up to a month. Yesterday, the Pentagon announced the first three American fatalities in what Trump insisted is America's right and just efforts to unseat Iran's government. LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks filed this report.
They've rejected every opportunity to renounce their nuclear ambitions, and we can't take it anymore.
After that 2:30 a.m. TV address on Saturday, the president was largely absent from public view for the rest of the weekend. It was notable that none of his senior officials was put up to appear on the big Sunday TV talk shows. But before he flew back to Washington from his Mar-a-Lago resort, where he had authorized the start of the bombing campaign in concert with the Israeli military, the president late on Sunday noted the first three American fatalities in the conflict.
Earlier today, CENTCOM shared the news that three U.S. military service members have been killed in action. As one nation, we grieve for the true American patriots who have made the ultimate sacrifice.
Amid polling that shows only one American in four supports the airstrikes that on Saturday killed Iran's supreme leader, and according to the president, 47 other senior Iranian officials, the U.S. leader who was elected promising to end America's entanglement in far-off forever wars warned Americans to brace for more of their troops to be killed.
Sadly, there will likely be more. Before it ends, that's the way it is. Likely be more, but we'll do everything possible where that won't be the case.
But he insisted justice is on his side.
These actions are right and they are necessary to ensure that Americans will never have to face a radical, bloodthirsty terrorist regime armed with nuclear weapons and lots of threats.
Meanwhile, one of the president's loyal supporters questioned whether Iran really was 2 weeks away from securing a nuclear weapon. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas told CBS he thought the American military's bunker-busting bombs had taken care of all of that last summer.
I don't have present-day intelligence on what progress they had made towards rebuilding nuclear weapons since we bombed their facilities. I have no indication that they were anywhere close to getting nuclear weapons because our bombing was devastating.
And prominent figures within President Trump's MAGA movement are furious, accusing him of betraying the principles on which he ran for office.
We don't have the stockpiles, and we don't have the necessary industrial capacity to replace them quickly.
Former Fox News host Tucker Carlson, who was with the president in the White House only last week, called the attack on Iran absolutely disgusting and evil. And last week he warned his viewers and listeners that America cannot win the kind of drawn-out conflict for which the president is now bracing the country.
We are not in a position to have a lengthy engagement, and everyone at the Pentagon who's gaming this out understands that. And again, this has been reported publicly.
Former Fox News host and our podcaster Tucker Carlson ending that report by LBC Simon Marks. 7:29. Let's get one call in ahead of the news. Lloyd in Lewisham. Lloyd, you're on the radio. Your view on events over the last 48 hours. Good morning.
I think that the only madman in this is Donald Trump. This has been done for domestic reasons. We were told very recently, or not too long ago, that Iran was bombed out of the nuclear missile industry for a generation. Mm-hmm. Now we're bombing them because they're close to building one. That is absolute rubbish. Well, it's true. You can't believe a word he's saying. He's unstable.
And you can believe the Ayatollah, the late Ayatollah?
No. What do you mean, believe the late Ayatollah? Well,
you said the mad person in all of this is Donald Trump. I don't think he's mad. He makes some questionable decisions, but it would be wrong, as with anyone, to say everything they do is right or everything they do is wrong. But I do think it's worth looking a little bit at the Ayatollah and his conduct. Was he not mad as well?
Of course. I'm not saying he's not mad. So do we need another madman in the arena?
Pardon?
Do we need another madman in the ring, then? Is that what we're saying?
I say again, do I support everything Donald Trump does? No, of course not. Is it right to say he's mad? No, that's too crude and too basic. He's not mad.
Why is it crude and basic if he's told us that he's bombed them out of the nuclear business?
They can rebuild. Whoa,
he said he's bombed them out for a generation.
So maybe they rebuild quicker than they thought. So let them have their nuclear weapon, Lloyd, and then you're going to feel real safe in Lewisham, aren't you?
I'm not saying that. Let's have just someone who knows what they're doing. How am I doing that?
Who?
Look, if we are told that he's bombed them out...
I know, this is the third time. Guess what? You can rebuild... Stop saying that. They said about Germany in the Second World War and they managed to rebuild.
Well, then we need somebody in the office who knows what they're talking about and who can tell the truth.
All right, OK. We're going round in circles. Have a safe day down in Lewisham, Lloyd. Thank you. There'll be plenty more reaction to come. And if you're fortunate enough, of course, not to be living in that region and living in the country here, such as the United Kingdom, as long as you don't have family in the military, how does it affect you? Well, probably through your wallet or your purse.
A sustained oil price spike could play havoc with the global economy. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this with Nick shortly.
7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. Let's get the news, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer says he's agreed to American requests to use British bases to attack Iranian missile sites. The Prime Minister has stressed the move is aimed at protecting British lives and the UK won't be taking part in offensive action. Shortly after Sir Keir's announcement last night, RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus was targeted in a suspected drone strike. LBC understands nobody was hurt on the attack on the military base. And President Trump has admitted there's likely to be more American military casualties before the end of the offensive, which could last several weeks. He confirmed 3 US service members have been killed in the action since the strikes started on Saturday. One other story for you. The Home Secretary has told LBC that Britain will pay failed asylum seekers more money to leave the country if they cooperate with the system. It says new rules offering only temporary protection to adult refugees in the UK are coming into force. LBC weather. Patchy rain continuing in the west, drier in the east with some bright spells. A high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
From rusty chains to fancy frames and everything in between. Sign up for British Heart Foundation's iconic London to Brighton bike ride. Because it's not your wheels, it's how you use them. Whether you're a brand new rider or seasoned pro, challenge yourself this June and make your ride matter with British Heart Foundation. And you won't need any fancy gear, just your helmet and your bike. Sign up today, search London to Brighton Bike Ride and keep us beating.
Cook with confidence with Hotpoint ovens available at AO. Whatever's on the menu, have the flexibility to air fry, bake or steam for perfectly cooked meals every time. Plus, we'll deliver and install them when it suits you. Hotpoint's trusted appliances from the UK's most trusted electrical retailer. Shop now at AO.com. Verify trust at AO.com/trust and hotpoint.co.uk/trustpilot.
Ah, springtime is coming. The season of renewal, of new beginnings, of a brand new Peugeot with savings of up to £3,250 across our car range. Enjoy the Peugeot Spring Upgrade event. Find your nearest retailer on Peugeot.co.uk and book a test drive today. Available on orders between the 16th of February and 16th of March 2026. Promotion subject to full terms and conditions. Visit Peugeot.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34 is the time. Well, it's the story that's dominating just about every conversation, events in and around Iran or the whole region. And what is the impact, of course, as I said earlier, unless you're a military personnel, if you have a family serving the military, what's the impact? Well, it's probably going to be felt in your wallet or your purse. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, has all the latest. Oil prices up and down a bit or continually going up. Where are we, Christian? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, markets in London are opening to an extraordinary amount of uncertainty later on this morning. Expectation is that the FTSE 100 will sink a bit on the open. And there are various sectors that are going to be responsible for that. We can turn to them in a moment. When it comes to the wider global economy and oil prices in particular, they are climbing. We're not expecting, as it stands, a dramatic surge, but we are looking at oil prices, Brent crude barrel going up to around $80. That is up on this time last week, up on this time a few days ago. Why? Iran is among the world's largest oil-producing countries, pumps out about 5 million barrels a day, accounting for about 4% of global production. But, of course, it's also the case that beyond what Iran itself produces and exports to the likes of China and others, it's a question of regional stability or instability and indeed regional infrastructure. You think of the shipping lanes. The Straits of Hormuz have not been formally closed by Iran, but it is now very dangerous territory, and a lot of shipping giants have voluntarily said we're not going to pass through there. So this could lead to Brent crude up to about $100 a barrel. And $100 a barrel as a price point for oil, Nick, adds about 0.6 to 0.7% to global inflation. Also has wider consequences on natural gas prices, say nothing of confidence and sentiment. So this in turn could slow down the pace of interest rate cuts. It could increase fuel bills, whether that's in the car or at home. And now what everybody is waiting for is to be able to determine how long this particular conflict is going to go on for. Is it going to be drawn out across different countries in the region? Is it going to be protracted? Is it going to lead to a spring and summer of instability? Because if it does, then this is the sort of thing that will be felt at the pump and discussed at the Bank of England. And it's an absolute headache for a government in this country trying to capitalize on stability and generate economic growth.
Now, we're going to be hearing from doyen of travel journalist Simon Cord a little bit later, but it is worth looking on the business footing as well. What is it doing for flights and other travel issues? Christian?
Yeah, you consider the extent to which, Nick, Middle East airports, think of Dubai in particular, are hubs for travel across the world. You'll get a sense now with so many hundreds of flights being rerouted and cancelled, you get a sense of quite what an impact this has. Airline experts, as you'll hear no doubt shortly from Simon, are talking about the biggest wave of aviation disruption since the pandemic. Hundreds and hundreds of flights have been cancelled, many cancelled today. There's turmoil in global air travel. That is having an impact on airline stocks and indeed, you know, wider leisure and hotel industry stocks as well. The flight numbers so far, I think about 1,300 flights cancelled early on Monday. Emirates is one of the, I think I'm right in saying, one of the world's biggest carriers, is cancelling hundreds and hundreds of flights, along with Etihad, that's based in Abu Dhabi, and Qatar Airways, Airways based in Doha. So these regional carriers actually have an extraordinarily large footprint across the globe. So you're now looking at thousands of flights cancelled across the weekend and into today. There's no way to sugarcoat it, says one industry analyst. This is going to be a nightmare for travellers and possibly, Nick, a wider nightmare for the airline industry and indeed hotel and leisure industry.
Christian, you'll understand as a journalist, I've got a line into someone in the region, so I'm going to end it there. We'll talk around the same time tomorrow. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, thank you, 7:38. Matt Rickard joins me now from, are you in Abu Dhabi, Matt? Good morning.
Hi, Nick, good morning. Yes, I am. How are you doing?
I'm all right. So tell everyone why you found yourself stranded, when you were due back and what happened.
Yeah, so I live in Thailand. I'm a UK citizen. I was on my way through for business. So I landed on Saturday, was getting a connecting flight, at which point, around kind of lunchtime on Saturday, and that was when the airspace was closed and all the flights were cancelled. So, yeah, I didn't get through to the UK, and I've been in a hotel for the last 3 days. But I am actually at the airport now, which has been somewhat of a spontaneous surprise, I suppose.
Have you got yourself there under your own steam? Has there been support from the Foreign Commonwealth Office?
Well, I don't know whether it's from the... No. The airline, so I'm on Etihad. They rebooked this morning. I got an email saying I'm flying at 2:10, and then we were just kind of put onto buses. There doesn't seem to be any... The airport's not officially open with a lot of traffic, but they're just shuttling people in on flights that are able to leave, apparently, after 2:00. So, in theory, I'll be out of here in a couple of hours, but, yeah, it is still theory.
And just so, to clarify, where is it you hope to get to from Abu Dhabi, Matt?
So I'm going from here to London. I've got a week's worth of business and then a bit of holiday. So, yeah, I was on my way to London, essentially, I'm hopefully going to be there still.
Where were you put in a hotel? Have you had to cover the costs? What's the situation with that?
No, I was put into the Hilton about 20 minutes from Abu Dhabi Airport, and the government here have covered all the costs. They've been pretty amazing, to be honest. It's, you know, obviously, dealing with all the other stuff going on and missiles and alarms and stuff. But aside of that, yeah, the room's been covered. There was no hassle with that. All the food was covered. So, yeah, I haven't had to lift a penny apart from the odd glass of wine. So.
Okay. Well, the government would not cover that, I don't sense. Matt, when you get to the airport, what's the level of security? Do people broadly, is there a sense of safety, security? Is there a sense of anxiety? How would you describe it, Matt?
Yeah, there is. I mean, I've just walked in here. I've just got off the bus. Everyone, there's a little bit of anxiety and probably a little bit more uncertainty of will we actually get on the flight. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, I'm hoping this is the beginning of the end of the last 3 days, and we're going to, board in a couple of hours and get out of here. But
happy landings, Matt. I hope you get on that aircraft. Thank you. If you don't, perhaps you'd be kind enough to send us a WhatsApp or a message. But here's hoping you board. Just to explain, Matt, talking about a couple of hours' time, they're quite a few hours ahead. They're 4 hours ahead. So his 2:30 in the afternoon flight is much closer than, say, it would perhaps appear here in the UK. Right, that's Abu Dhabi. Let's go to Dubai. Charlie is in Dubai. Do you live there? Were you working there? Have you got stranded there? Which is it, Charlie? Good morning.
Hey, Nick. Yeah, it's Charlie from Canterbury. I moved here. We've spoken many times. I've moved here a little while back now, and here I am.
Okay, how's it been for you?
Pretty scary. Pretty scary. There's a lot of activity over Marina, which is where I live.
Right.
And it's constant, pretty constant over the last couple of days. Last night was probably the most clearest of them all, but this morning around 9... something shook the whole building, and it really was powerful.
So you've actually felt the explosions, have you?
Absolutely, yeah.
When you meet with other expats or people from elsewhere in the world, an attack on Dubai, that was effectively ruled never, almost inadmissible, wasn't it, Charlie?
Well, yeah, I mean, no one knows anything, Nick. We can't leave the border at all. We can't, we can't go by car. Everyone's in situ, shops are closing, no one's on the streets.
When you say, if you could, would you want to come home briefly or permanently? What does the future hold for you?
Well, I'm in protection, so I have clients here that I have to get out very first of all.
Right, okay. Are you supportive of what the US has done?
I am, but I don't think they thought that it would affect Dubai or Abu Dhabi or places like that as it has done. But obviously being the closest, I mean, the Palm's the closest point, right, to Iran. So it goes without saying, but I don't think they strategically have catered for that.
Lastly, what needs to happen next, Charlie?
God knows. I mean, the British need to do something. That people want to go home because no one can move anywhere.
Look after yourself, Charlie. Thanks for calling in. Take care. Gemma's in Dubai as well. Gemma, what have you been through the last 48 hours? Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
All right.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly, my experience seems to be a bit different to Charlie's. He lives down in the marina and we live more in the kind of expat suburbs bit.
Right.
But we are closer to the airport.
Right.
We've had quite a few explosions. The thing is, we've been here for 5 years, so we know the sounds because they practice all the time in the desert. So we know what the sound of a missile is because mm-hmm. we just know. And then when the first one came in, it was a bit of a shock, and they were quite loud throughout Saturday, but sporadic. Yesterday was just a couple, and then there's been a couple this morning, but they seem further away from us. So, you know, we're in the Middle East. It's not Benidorm, which I think sometimes people forget when they come on holiday here. But, you know, we're very close to Iran.
How safe do you feel?
Yeah, we do actually feel really safe. The UAE government are brilliant. They always look after and they keep us updated, and they've been sending out alerts and telling us what to do. The kids are a little bit, my daughter is a little bit jumpy when the rockets go off.
How old is your daughter?
She's 11. So
right.
She's been finding it a bit more difficult than the boys, I would say.
And what about, we heard from Charlie there that some shops are closing and there is a degree of anxiety in his part of Dubai. Are shops closing where you are, Gemma?
Not as far as I know. My husband went and did the food shop yesterday. I mean, the only thing that would be a concern is if it carries on for too long, is because we don't really make anything. Well, we do, but not a great deal, and everything's imported. That could be an issue because some of the shops were quite empty yesterday. They got kind of a bit COVID ransacked. So they're saying that there's plenty of stocks and things.
Broadly speaking, are you supportive of what the United States and Israel did?
Yeah, I am, because I think he promised to send them help and those poor people went out on the streets and then nothing came. So that, for me, living in the region was something that always concerned me, that these poor people had been put up for nothing. And if the regime is what they want and it gets changed, then we kind of always expected it, living here, that something like this could happen.
Gemma, you look after yourself, the family, your husband. Thank you for your input from Dubai. Coming up after the news, we hope to hear from Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper. What exactly is the level of support from the United Kingdom? It's 7:45 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer has agreed to American requests to use British bases to attack Iranian missile sites. The Prime Minister has stressed the moves aimed at protecting British lives, and the UK won't be taking part in offensive action. Shortly after Sir Keir's announcement last night, RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus was hit by a suspected drone strike. No injuries have been reported at the base. And President Trump's told Americans that combat operations in Iran will continue until his administration's objectives are achieved. LBC weather, rain moving east across northern and western areas, dry, mild and sunny in the southeast, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M4 westbound between junctions 8-9 at Maidenhead and 10 at the A329M. It's because of an accident where two lanes are closed for recovery. Also, problems continue on the M25 anti-clockwise. It's very busy from junction 21 at the M1 to 19 at Watford. It was after an accident that happened earlier, but all the lanes are now back open. The A13's reopened eastbound at the Ferry Lane interchange at Raynham, but there are still long delays. Westbound is also still very slow from the Wennington interchange from the onlookers from earlier. And no Piccadilly line running from Hatton Cross to Heathrow Airport.
LBC.
Pump 4, please. The one with the new tyres. I got them on eBay for such a good price, and the windscreen wipers. I fitted those myself. They click right into place. It was incredibly satisfying.
Right. Anything else?
Oil, headlights. Oh, and furry dice, you know, for the lols.
Aside from the petrol.
Oh, sorry. Thought you were asking what else I got on eBay.
No, I think we got that covered.
When you find great deals on car parts, you can't help but say when it's eBay, things people love. Eligible parts, T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone. Even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band.
Jessica, who thought Compound Interest was a prison dating app. And Sue. Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder Which have recommended us 7 years running. AJ Bell. Feel good. Investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
It's hard to concentrate when you're worried about your health. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world. Like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
At AXA Health Insurance, we build our teams with people who care. So when you need us, we're here to support you. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. Pre-existing conditions are not covered.
The Hillary sale ends soon. So get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before 8, be honest with you, we haven't got the Foreign Secretary as yet. We will, of course, put her to air, as they say, just as soon as she gets to the LBC studios down there in Westminster. So take more of your calls, which is obviously a positive. Let's just feature some of the social media and texts that are coming in. Mike and Crawley. Iran. Can I suggest it might be defined by dead bodies? Iran is prepared to accept civilian casualties. Indeed, they've already killed more of their own people than any American airstrike yet. How many American bodies will Trump be prepared or allowed by his MAGA base before they turn on him? Like Putin against the Ukraine, Iran is in it for the long haul, and know from previous encounters, Western democracies seek the quickest possible exit. As Machiavelli said, wars begin when you will, but never end when you please. Mark in Crawley says, we can't say if this will turn into another Iraq, which will be in the back of Sir Keir Starmer's mind. It's a huge gamble. He may need to respond, even though it's not ideal. Charles says, international law, honestly, sometimes, not all the time, doing the right thing outweighs a lawyer and a judge in a courtroom who sit on their backsides. I'm tired of these nonsense laws we have. Perhaps it's time to revisit these laws. Lastly, David says of the Richard Dearlove, the interview with which we started the show, former head of MI6, the UK and the West, particularly the Western media, are morally broken. If Israel had the right to defend itself, Israel has that right 1,000 times more. Don't cloud the water. Som is in Orpington. Hello, Som. You're on the radio. What can you tell me? Good morning.
Well, good morning, Nick. I've spoken before. I just want to say I'm absolutely fuming about what's happening in Iran. Right. Again, I don't think, well, I know Israel and the US don't have any right to attack Iran. They've broken many, many international laws. Here we go again. They're doing it once more, and nobody's saying anything. I do not agree with the Iranian regime. I have said this to you previously. I think they should go, but not like this.
How would they go?
Look, if there are 92 million people live in that country, 92 million people, if you just take that in for a minute. Mm-hmm. If at least 55% of them wanted the regime to go, the regime would have gone by now.
But some...
My understanding is it's
not a country I know well, but we've seen that any opposition, they just murder them, some.
Yes, they do, yeah, because they are so powerful, I get it. But again, the majority, my belief is the majority of them do, you know, They're either getting on with their lives as they are, or
but
they're not that bothered.
They're being murdered or put in jail.
Yes, they are being murdered, but they're not. The people are getting on with their lives and not going out there protesting aren't getting murdered. They are living in that country.
But how relaxed are you that Iran is building nuclear capability?
Deep down, I think Iran should have a nuclear bomb. You know, every other country has. A lot of countries have it. Iran signed the NPT. There are 4 countries that never signed it, including Israel. How many nuclear bombs has Israel got? Why is nobody questioning this?
Well, hold on. I tell you who might want to question your conversation. Don't go, Som. Michael in Sittingbourne. What would you say to Som and his suggestions? Morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nick. I think you need to sit down and take some reality pills.
Tell him why. What do you mean by that?
He really is quite happy about a bunch of terrorists having a nuclear weapon. Oh, come on.
So Israel is not... You don't count Israel a terrorist state?
No, Israel is not a terrorist state.
It's not. Oh, wow. You're something else. I need a reality check. Is that what you really think? I need a reality check. Have you seen what Israel has done to Palestine? Israel is still bombing Palestine after all the hostages coming back.
The only democracy in the area is Israel. I'm not seeking to justify all its actions. I am not seeking. But if you had the kind of democracy in Iran that you have in Iran that you have in Israel, you wouldn't see thousands of people being killed or jailed, would you, Som?
Iran had democracy, Nick.
Right.
Iran had democracy.
About, I'm talking about where we are now.
I know you're talking about where we are now.
I think it's 40 plus years
Yes, but this is, again, all because of foreign intervention.
Let's talk about where we are now, Som.
We are talking about where we are now, Nick.
Go on.
I'm just making a point. That's all. Again, foreign intervention, back in 1947, 57, whenever it was, overthrew the democracy. But now they're trying to go and save Iran.
All right, OK. Som, thank you. It's an interesting view. Let's see if others agree. Michael, expand on your view. What do you hope would happen next? What should the level of British support be, Michael?
Well, I think Starmer's a complete wet wipe, to be honest. I mean, he doesn't know whether he's coming or going. And the thing is, I think we should have actually been far more supportive of America. I really do. I mean, they're our nearest ally. I mean, all this about special relationship is nonsense. Mm. We have a close relationship with America. It hasn't been special since 1945. So I do think the media should stop keep going on about this because it doesn't exist anymore. We have a very close relationship with America and we need them. We need them far, far more than they need us. And the thing is, all these people ringing in saying, oh, terrible, terrible. The Iranian regime is a bunch of terrorist thugs. I mean, they're hardly better than the Nazis. Honestly.
Does that permit the US and Israel to kill the leader of a foreign country in the fashion that they did on Saturday?
I think it's wonderful, to be honest. Absolutely wonderful.
Even though it is reported there's been drone strikes on the RAF base in Cyprus now.
But the thing is, I think that would have happened anyway. I was just waiting for it to happen, to be honest. I mean, I'm actually going to Cyprus shortly.
Are you?
And
when are you going?
Hopefully. About 3 weeks, I hope.
Okay. Well, stay tuned. We've got Simon Calder, the doyen of travel journalists. He's joining us later in the show to talk about what the impact could be. You're not the only one who's concerned about their travel plans. Michael, look after yourself. Thank you for your view. Peter in Stirling. Peter, where do you think this goes next? Where do you want it to go next? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I think we should stay out of it. I think it's criminally reckless. We can all agree that the Ayatollah Khomeini being dead is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, a lot of these people commenting, it's like Iraq and Afghanistan didn't happen. And this country is four times the land area and twice the population, 67 languages, Nick. Mm-hmm. The country is not going to hold itself together. We're going to have either the IRGC are now going to start cracking down to keep order, and it's going to be even more bloody, all the country's going to fall into it, like, you know, it's going to shatter, and we're going to have war without end, and it's going to be the next Somalia or Syria on a whole different scale. And I'm sorry, that's going to prompt a huge humanitarian wave of refugees towards Europe.
And as regards nuclear capability, if it is right that Iran was restoring its position there, the West allows that to continue?
Well, I think that striking the nuclear facilities is something that we've done that has been done before by the West, and this was far more than that, Nick.
Okay, Peter, I will end there because I'm pleased to say we are joined now by Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper, joining us here on LBC. Foreign Secretary, I'm grateful for your time. Thank you. When was the United Kingdom informed of the joint US-Israel airstrike on the Ayatollah's compound on Saturday?
So we didn't know about that until after it happened, but you'll appreciate...
What does that say about our special relationship?
You'll appreciate I'm not going to get into a detailed operational commentary. As you know, we made the decision not to provide support for the US strikes over the weekend, and we have taken a different view about the way forward, but we are in a position now where there is obviously attacks going on partner countries in the Gulf from Iran.
Why the delay and the move and position of the United Kingdom Foreign Secretary?
So over the weekend, what we've seen is now attacks by Iran on partner countries that weren't involved in any strikes on Iran, and countries where there are 300,000 British citizens, and where we have seen, as we seen the report this morning, we've now also had the attacks as well. We have that have come close to the Bahrain UK base, and also the attack of the drone attack affecting Cyprus as well. So it is, we have seen this escalation by the Iranian regime, and we've got 300,000 British citizens, often holiday makers and people who have been travelling through the region, and as a result of the closure in airspace are not able to return home. And that's why we have said we would provide the support for defensive action, and that is crucial.
Is it the activities of the United States and Israel, is it a breach of international law, Foreign Secretary?
That's for them to set out the their assessment of the international law of their action. We have been very clear that the action that we are taking complies with international law. And as you'll know, we've even published some summaries of the assessment in international law.
Why can't you say whether you believe it's a breach of international law, Foreign Secretary?
We don't routinely comment on the actions of allies. They have to set out their own assessment around the international law of their own actions and the reasons for their action as well, the purposes for it.
Can you give us an update? What level of damage, if any, was sustained at the RAF base on Cyprus?
So the Minister of Defence will provide more details through the course of the day, but this was one unmanned drone that affected the airport runway. The base is still operating, and also in conjunction, where I spoke to the Foreign Minister of Cyprus yesterday, there is a lot of work underway. There is some precautionary action being taken to move families to other parts of Cyprus on a precautionary basis. And also extensive assessments underway at the moment about what has happened.
What level of support will the United Kingdom continue to provide to the United States? They're clearly on the offense or offensive. We support the offensive now?
No. So the issue here is that there are effectively ballistic missile sites and launchers that are pointed at Gulf countries, and therefore, particularly in southern Iran. So this is about the US being able to use UK bases to deal with some of those launchers, those strikes, to prevent strikes as a proportionate defensive action. This doesn't cover things like political targets or economic targets or wider infrastructure targets. It is specifically about the proportionate defensive action.
How is that to be regulated? That US aircraft departing from a UK maintained base is only on a defensive operation rather than offensive operation.
We will continue to work closely with the US, and
so they have to seek permission, do they?
Those discussions have been taking place through military channels as well, and all of this can be kept under review. But what we know is that there have been huge numbers of drone strikes against. We think at the moment we assess that there have been hundreds of missiles launched at those Gulf partners, and also thousands of drones as well. It's possible to provide some of those Gulf partners who have asked for defensive help. It's possible to provide them with some other kinds of capabilities to deal with some of the drones. But in terms of the ballistic missiles and those launchers, actually it's preventing them from launching in the first place that is so crucial to keeping those Gulf partners safe. And I've talked to some of those Gulf foreign ministers, to many of them yesterday and on Saturday. They are shocked and appalled and furious at the way in which they have been targeted by this Iranian regime. We've seen these reckless strikes that have hit hotels, that have hit people, civilian areas, as a result of the recklessness of the way that the Iranian regime has behaved. And of course, we know this is a regime that has brutally killed tens of thousands of its own people, as well as seeking to develop a nuclear program.
The United Kingdom supports the way in which the Ayatollah was killed.
No, that is not something that we were involved in.
But does it support the end result?
That is not something we were involved in.
Does it support the end result?
I don't think anyone would mourn that what has happened, because this is obviously part of a regime that has been not only brutally pursuing its own citizens, but also supporting terrorist activity across the region, destabilizing activity through proxies across the region. But it is not something that we were involved in.
Let's come back to the United Kingdom. Mm. Will the UK government now prescribe the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, as a terrorist organization, as other nations have already done?
Well, our legislation structure is slightly different from other countries, but as you know, this is an issue that I have been concerned about for a long time, Nick, and that's why, while I was Home Secretary, I commissioned the review of our legislation to look at where there were gaps in our legislation. The advice that we had from the Independent Reviewer of Counterterrorism was that, in fact, our legislation is designed around terrorist groups rather than state-backed organisations and groups, and therefore that we needed to change our legislation. We are committed to doing that.
When?
That is being taken forward by the Home Office now. I do want to see that legislation change.
I mean, is that now being dealt with as a matter of urgency as we find ourselves in this conflict?
We do already have a whole range of restrictions to prevent the IRGC operating in the UK. As you'll know, some of this is about criminal activity that has been taking place and backed threats on UK soil, which our counter-terrorism police and our security services take immensely seriously and will continue to do so in order to keep people safe.
Foreign Secretary, the bases we mentioned earlier to provide use for the United States, do they include Diego Garcia?
It does, but I'm not going to go into operational details.
RAF Fairford?
Again, Nick, you would. I can confirm it does not include Cyprus, but I'm not going to go into the detail of the operations.
What does the end game look like, Foreign Secretary, here?
Well, we still believe that ultimately we need to get to a negotiated agreement with the Iranian regime so that they do not have nuclear capabilities and they cannot develop nuclear capabilities. So we continue to want diplomatic avenues to be pursued. At the moment, given the strikes that are taking place and the way in which the Iranian regime is operating, at the moment we have to provide that defensive support. But we do still want to reach a point, as the Prime Minister has repeatedly said, where we can get to a de-escalation and we can get to a swift resolution of this.
Final question. I know you're busy. You have a lot to do this morning. Can you give us an idea of getting, I understand somewhere in the region, like 94,000, roughly speaking, Brits who are in the region. What is the operation taking place for them, Foreign Secretary?
So it's estimated that there are actually 300,000 British citizens There's estimated about 300,000 people in the region, in the areas that have been targeted. Of those, 102,000 have now registered their presence with the UK. We know that this will include people who were there temporarily, holiday and travel and so on. And at the moment, in many of those areas, airspace is closed. And also the advice is for people to shelter in place because of some of the drone strikes and others that have been taking place. We're providing people with updated information, sending rapid deployment teams out to the region to work with our embassies and consular staff, and also to work with the airlines, with the travel industry and with those governments to seek to provide people with options. But this is a hugely stressful time and we will provide regular updates.
Really grateful for your time this morning. I'll let you get on. Thank you, Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper, joining us here on LBC, taking the time to 7 minutes after eight. We will suspend the news bulletin. I'm sure some of it will be lifted from that conversation anyway, and continue to update with where we go. And let's come back to domestic matters in a sense. Writing in one of the newspapers this morning, Mark Almond, who's the director of the Crisis Research Institute in Oxford, says, I appreciate he doesn't write the headline, but I fear a wider war and terrorism in the West. Here to give the reasoning for that, Mark Allman joins me now. Good to have you on, Mark. Always good to see you, sir. Why? Give the rationale behind the headline, if you would. Morning.
Well, there are two things. One is that the Iranian state itself has an interest in trying to disrupt the internal workings of the societies that are at war with it, directly like the United States, and I'm afraid increasingly so, the British state. And on the other hand, there is a risk that there are people in countries like Britain. We've seen a shooting overnight in America, which is alleged to be associated with the war, a mass shooting, that may well feel they should show their discontent with pro-American, pro-Israeli policy by taking direct action, including violent action. And so we're in a very sensitive situation here, because we've seen over the previous years since 2023, very big demonstrations and some actions against Israeli targets, main with some elements of violence, but primarily destruction of property. But there is a risk that the temperature could rise out of control, and particularly if there are Iranian agents. And remember, a few months ago, four men were arrested and accused of plotting a terror attack on behalf of Iran. Then there is a risk that you'll have acts of terrorism, and they may well be, as terrorists are, very indiscriminate. Because as the Iranian, as the foreign secretary was saying, the attacks on the Gulf states and on what we might well think of civilian and economic targets in the Gulf states show that the Iranian Revolutionary Guards basically see disrupting society on the other side as their best weapon. They can't really do much to disrupt the American or Israeli air forces.
Mark, what do you make of the rationale put forward by the Foreign Secretary there that Britain did not offer support in a defensive fashion until we started seeing attacks on hotels and other areas within the region, and that changed the stance of the United Kingdom?
Well, that may well be the case, but I think it would have been better if the government had thought through what was going to happen and how it would react. It should have had scenarios planned out, and was still seeming to be sort of pulled along step by step into a full-scale conflict. Now, you asked quite clearly several times, is it good that the Ayatollah has gone, that he's been killed in an air raid, that he is, as it were, the arch enemy of the Americans, but to some extent self-declared arch-enemy of the West and Western values. And she couldn't give a clear answer. Indeed, she seemed to want to avoid endorsing that. And that's going to cause trouble with the United States, because like it or not, we are now acting as an ally, albeit as one that's reluctant to go too far down the road of full-scale conflict. And by the way, we don't really have the forces and the resources to do that. But the Americans may well begin to say, can we trust the Brits? Will they be wobbly? Will they be peeled off if, for instance, there are terrorist attacks in Britain or against British people, or if there are very negative economic consequences of this war? Remember, we are very dependent on importing energy. And if the price of energy goes up dramatically, there are going to be huge domestic economic consequences.
You conclude your piece, and I urge everyone to read Mark Allman's piece, the final paragraph. The dead Ayatollah's spirit lives on among the many regime fanatics. The question now is this: can the West avert an escalation into a third world war? Because I very much fear what is to come. Mark Allman, what do you think might be to come? What do you hope might be to come?
Okay. We're only on the third morning of this conflict. Maybe it will be a six-day war like 1967, and it will all be over much more quickly than people fear. But we have seen, for instance, China is obviously supplying satellite data to the Iranians. China has a clear interest. So does Russia. Russia has an interest in this war going on because it's pushing up oil prices, and that subsidizes Putin's own war in Ukraine. And there is already a series of unintended, unexpected consequences. And wars can spiral out of control. And that's what I fear. And that's why I think we needed much more clear thinking from all the governments. Trump himself doesn't seem to have really thought through what would happen beyond we're going to have a big dramatic breakthrough on day one, which they had. They killed the Ayatollah. The British government has not shown much sign of really thinking through the scenarios. And that, to be fair, the British government is not alone in this.
Always enjoy speaking with you. That piece is in the Daily Mail. Mark Allman, thank you as ever. Historian, columnist, director of the Crisis Research Institute in Oxford. Now 12 minutes after it. With so much focusing, so much conversation on the United States and the US military, let's bring the conversation Ben Hodges, who's former commanding general of United States Army Europe. Good to have you on board, sir. Thank you for your time. What will be going on within the Pentagon and other US military areas and discussions right now, would you say, General? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, first of all, I'm sure they are looking around for ammunition. I mean, there was concern leading up to this that there might not be enough of what we call preferred munitions, Tomahawk, Patriot interceptors, these kinds of things that are expensive and take a long time to produce, and a lot of them are being expended already. So I'm sure that they're working hard on that aspect of it. If this is going to last more than a few days, and even the president now was saying it could last for weeks, that changes the calculus, of course, in terms of the necessary logistics and authorities and so on. And then finally, I am sure that they're in the Pentagon, but also at the U.S. Central Command headquarters, they're looking at the what we call battle damage assessment. What targets are still out there that need to be hit?
You talk about those targets. The would seem to be the way the compound with the Ayatollah was pinpointed with such accuracy. Were you not the least bit surprised with that? By that, were you, even with your military experience, thought, "Wow, they've done a pretty good job there"? How did you respond, General?
First of all, I was astounded to see that so many of the top leadership were together in one place meeting at the Supreme Leader's residence.
Would they have known that, General? Would they have had intel saying, now is the time, if you're going to go, go now?
I think there was a lot of reporting about this in the weeks coming up about how much Israel has been able to penetrate Iran and the targeting. And that first was evident to me back in the summer, although others would have known better. I think they had very good intelligence about who was meeting and when, which may be why they decided to attack in the day rather than traditionally at nighttime.
Lastly, some commentators in the United Kingdom, I stress in the United Kingdom, are saying it's very difficult to follow Trump's game plan here. It seems to be heading one way one day, well, 1 hour, I'm sorry, and another way the next. Again, as a military bloke, your response, General?
So for me, the most important thing was always clarity of the end state. What is the strategic objective that use of force is supposed to help achieve? And this has never been clear, or else it's changed exactly as you have just described. And then even yesterday, I read Senator Graham, who is one of the president's most ardent supporters, added a new justification, which was to make sure that Iran could not support terrorism. So there's a list of justifications versus an end state, and that's going to play out, I think, over the next several days.
Really appreciate your time this morning, sir. Thank you very much. Ben Hodges, former commanding general of the United States Army here in Europe. All right, coming up after the news, we will obviously come back, and I'm sorry it's been a while, you've had half an hour before you had a news bulletin, apologies, so that's just the way the cookie crumbled. We will come back to more directions. Also, events here in the UK. Nigel Farage speaking last week following his party's bruising defeat to the Greens on Friday morning.
The Gorton-Denton by-election is a victory. Yes, it's a victory for sectarian voting. It's a victory for cheating in elections.
And he's likely to take more action on that today, and you'll hear more on that after the news. It's 8:15, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Foreign Secretary has told LBC she is confident the decision to allow America to use UK military bases to strike Iranian missile sites is legal. But Yvette Cooper wouldn't tell Nick whether she believes the US action is a breach of international law. Last night, the Prime Minister said that British bases could be used by the US for what he called defensive strikes. Sir Keir Starmer made clear that the UK is not joining American offensive action, but said the decision has been taken to protect British lives. And shortly after that announcement, RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus was the target of a suspected drone strike. No injuries have been reported. LBC weather, rain moving east across northern and western areas, dry, mild and sunny in the southeast, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 clockwise from Junction 2 at the A2 to Junction 3 at the M20. It's because there's a load of debris across the road and two lanes are closed. Very busy on the M4 westbound between Junctions 8, 9 at Maidenhead and 10 at the A329M. And that's following an accident where two lanes are closed. Long delays continue on the A13 westbound after that investigation earlier at Raynham. There are delays of about 40 minutes. Also in Hanworth, there are queues on the Twickenham Road. That's the A316 going eastbound up to Apex Corner, and that's where a car's broken down, and there are problems now on the A40 westbound. Heading towards South Ruislip, there's been an accident and there are queues.
This is LBC.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
You know that feeling when your money is working for you?
No? Well, make it. Open an investment account at XTB, make your first deposit and receive a free Rolls-Royce stock.
Rolls-Royce?
That's right. Own one of the best performing UK stocks this year for free. And if you like it, you can easily buy more stocks and ETFs with 0% commission. Join XTB and let your money work for you.
Your capital is at risk. Investments above €100,000 are charged at 0.2% commission. FX fees may apply. Limited availability. T's and C's apply.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You. And when it comes to getting aircon into London's hot and stuffy apartments and listed buildings, I'm the daddy. For years, Cool You have supplied and installed fully internal aircon systems with no mess, no fuss, and no external condensers. So head to coolyou.london today. Cool You. For a cool, comfortable home.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 8. We'll come to domestic matters, although there is, of course, domestic involvement now, in a sense, having that conversation with Mark Ormer. But let's say one more call now for the situation in the Middle East before we come back to that Gorton and Denton by-election. Simon's in Basingstoke. Simon, what level of support should the UK get? What do you make of the Foreign Secretary's rationale that we weren't going to support until they started bombing hotels in the region, partner countries, as it were? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. It's ridiculous. Let's look at some history. The Iranians were the ones who were providing the advanced improvised explosive devices to the rebels in Iraq, which were used against British and American forces. They've been supplying weapons to the Houthis that closed the Red Sea and almost closed the Suez Canal, which has destabilised Egypt. So I think our government needs to wake up and realise it's the 21st century and not the 1990s, and international law is not worth the paper it's written on.
We heard from the Foreign Secretary 10, 15 minutes ago that the United Kingdom's support is for defensive operations, not offensive operations. Do you actually buy that? Do you honestly think there's going to be a conversation between the RAF and the USAF to say, oh, yes, you can do that sortie, but you can't do this sortie?
No, I don't believe that. And to be honest, how would you enforce it? Why was RAF Akrotiri, why did it have no air defence system so a $30,000 Shahid drone could hit the airfield? And also, what if we do take a hard line with the Americans? The Americans can just say, okay, we won't replace your Trident missiles, and then the UK is no longer a nuclear power. But there's a bigger issue here that no one's thinking about, which is the conventional Iranian forces, as well as the Revolutionary Guard. That Iran has a conventional army of about 400,000 men. Those weren't used to suppress riots. Process we saw earlier in the year. So that implies to me that the regime doesn't trust them, but that's a substantial military force within the country where there is no love lost between the Artesh forces and the Revolutionary Guards. So you actually have an army in waiting that can step into the breach and help topple the regime.
Lastly, in a sentence, what do you think happens next, Simon? In a sentence, if you would.
In a sentence, I think we're going to see more continued attacks. I think the Iranians will start to run out of missiles, and I think the Iranian regime will fall. And China's going to lose one of its major oil suppliers.
Simon, we'll leave it there. Thank you. More calls coming in, and we'll come to those, of course, in a moment. 8:22. Let's go to domestic matters, and the dust really has now settled on the Gorton and Denton by-election, and it's followed by claims that Reform UK was robbed of victory by foreign-born voters. There are allegations of voter fraud. Nigel Farage talking of sectarianism. And we understand we're going to hear more from Mr. Farage about that later today. But let's go now to the Reform UK candidate, who, of course, did not manage to claim the seat. Matt Goodwin joins us now. Good to have you on, Mr. Goodwin. I'm sure you've had conversations with Mr. Farage about what is your assertion here from either you and or Nigel Farage? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I think having been on the ground, what I saw with my own eyes was a dangerous new sectarianism in British politics. We saw extensive family voting. That's not just me saying this. This is independent election observers. And what that means is members of the family essentially coercing other members of the family to vote in a certain way. And that was on the day of the election itself, before we even get to things like postal voting. We saw the Greens campaigning in different languages. We saw large numbers of people who weren't born in Britain exerting an influence over the direction of that by-election. And Nick, what I'm saying to you today, and what Nigel Farage has been saying over the weekend, is we need to reform our election system so that it is fair and balanced and democratic. Because, Nick, if we do not save our democracy, we will not save our country.
Democracy Volunteers is the group of which I think you referenced from the vote last week, Mr. Goodwin. But the local authority says, the relevant local authority says, that no claims were made during the election process. Is that the case? And if so, why?
Well, the report that you're referring to came out on the evening of the day of voting, just after 10 p.m. And what they found is that usually family voting, the rate of family voting at local elections and so on, is about 4%. At the Gorton and Denton by-election, they found it was over 12%. Now, they released that report on the night of the election because they were, in their words, so concerned about what they were witnessing at this by-election. And Nick, what Nigel Farage has rightly called for is a full investigation into what happened, both by the council and Greater Manchester Police. Because if this is happening in Gorton and Denton, you can bet your bottom dollar it is happening at elections across much of the UK. And we need to deal with this issue now before we have continuing ongoing malpractice.
But Mr. Goodwin, if you'd lost by 40 votes or 400 votes, you lost by more than 4,400 votes. Are you suggesting that many family votes were cast?
Well, firstly, that's not a reason for not strengthening and our democracy and ensuring it is democratic. I'm not saying the only reason that I lost was sectarianism. What I am saying is sectarianism was a major factor at this by-election. And if we do not sort this out, Nick, what I'm worried about, given the ongoing demographic changes in our country, high levels of immigration, high levels of demographic change, our democracy, Nick, my big concern, I haven't actually said this publicly since the election, is increasingly our democracy will start to look like some corrupt political system closer to, say, Lebanon or Sierra Leone than a modern Western liberal democracy. That is what I'm concerned about, Nick.
Let's finish then with how you and your colleagues at Reform want to see. So no foreign-born voters. What about postal votes? How would the system look under this, Mr. Goodwin?
Well, remember Tony Blair, again, it all goes back to Blair, but he was the man who introduced widespread postal voting. What Nigel Farage has said over the weekend correctly is let's restrict postal voting to people who are disabled or very elderly. Let's not make postal voting a sort of mainstream part of the democratic process. Because, Nick, we don't know what's going on behind closed doors. Nigel Farage has always brought up his memory of somebody turning up at a polling station with a Sainsbury's bag full of 1,000 votes. You know, this should not be happening. We're not living in the Middle East, Nick. We're living in, you know, one of the greatest democracies in the history of the world.
And you're not just doing this, lastly, because you're a bad loser. This is because the democratic process went through, the particular by-election constituency spoke, and you didn't like the result. Isn't that the reality?
Let me just leave you with this, Nick. I don't mind beating the Labour Party in the sixth safest Labour seat. I think this by-election was a success for Reform. But I tell you, I've seen this with my own eyes up close. I'm deeply, deeply concerned about where our democracy is heading.
Matt Goodwin, grateful for your time. You were the Reform UK candidate in that Gorton and Denton by-election. I understand we're going to hear more from Nigel Farage about that through the course of today. Hassan in Cambridge. Hassan, you're on the radio. Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning. I think Matt Goodwin is a sore loser. He's just lost to the woke Greens and can't take a beating. The issues that he's raising as some sort of conspiracies have been around in our politics for decades. People have been using Yiddish language leaflets and Hindi language songs to support their candidates, including Boris Johnson and Labour.
Are you worried if there is, and I hope we heard that word, if there is exploitation of postal votes, would that concern you, Hassan?
Actually, that would. But frankly, the postal vote percentage was much higher in the areas that reform has done well. So I think they should come clean about their postal vote operation, because it was much higher in the Denton area where reform has done well. So if there is suspicion, then it should be cast at reform's antics, not other parties.
Grateful for you. Thank you. Colin says, let's end postal voting and voting for non-citizens, says the man who wants to strengthen Western democracy. This comes in from Alan. No one is buying this reform, this reform nonsense. Steve says, reform are a disgrace. They're lying through their teeth. Why is it reform voters have to vote reform, or they could face all sorts of consequences? He is a loser. Well, I did ask him whether it was a sore losing, and he said it wasn't, so we had to take what we can. Hassan, thank you. The big conversation, with the greatest respect to Gordon and Denton, the bigger conversation for now is the escalating situation in the Middle East. Human is in Munich. Good morning, Human. How does this affect you? Good morning, sir.
Well, I have a family in Iran. I left Iran around 2004. My parents live there, my extended family live there, etc. So,
did you say your parents do live there or lived there?
Yes, they do live there.
They
yes,
do? They do. Have you had a conversation with them recently?
No, I haven't, because they have the regime has cut the internet and the phone lines. So
when did you last speak with your parents?
It was last week before the war started.
When you woke up, or whenever you heard on Saturday, whenever you heard the news about the death of the Ayatollah, Human, what was your reaction?
I was absolutely happy, enjoying it. That was like the best news in a month. The nation, the country has been in a state of depression and mourning and sadness, and that was like the best news that could come.
What do you think? I mean, you have... You're probably the best placed person to speak about that I've talked with through the course of this morning. What do you think will happen on the streets of Iran now?
I don't know if you've seen the videos. There has been since the news broke that the Ayatollah is dead. There has been celebrations. The people have been in the streets. They've been shouting from the rooftops, etc. And they started shooting at people even then. Despite bombs falling, the security forces shooting at them, people are in the streets. So I absolutely believe if the security forces are degraded, if the regime doesn't have the capability to commit the massacre that they did last month, the people will be in the street. They want change. They want this regime gone. They don't want everybody in this regime gone, reformists, fundamentalists, I don't know what are principalists, whatever they call themselves, etc.
But incredibly brave, lastly, Human, of folks to come out on the streets now, because you're so right. If they try and enforce a crackdown, as we've seen before, these people are, I don't know if you understand this expression, signing their death warrants, effectively possibly ending their lives.
Yeah, exactly. That's as you said.
Will you wish your parents, as and when you get through them, obviously the best wishes and wish them safety? Human, thank you. Do stay in touch as you watch events develop over the coming days. In fact, I might actually ask one of the team to have a chat with you. I might talk to you in a couple of days, because you've got such investment there with your mum and dad living in Iran. All right, coming up after news, we come back to domestic matters.
Shabana Mahmood says she wants to pay migrants more money to leave Britain voluntarily, as she faces a 40-strong rebellion to her migration plans. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark, and I've been with the Home Secretary in Denmark.
And that'll be the other side of the 8:31 news headlines here on LBC. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
The Foreign Secretary has told LBC that she's confident the UK's decision to allow America to use its military bases to strike Iranian missile sites is legal. But Yvette Cooper wouldn't tell Nick whether she believes the US action is a breach of international law. Last night, the Prime Minister said that British bases could be used by the US for what he called defensive strikes. Sir Keir Starmer made clear that the UK is not joining American action, but said the decision's been taken to protect British lives. And shortly after Sir Keir's announcement, RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus was targeted in a suspected drone strike. No injuries have been reported, but families that live close to the site are being moved as a precaution. One other story for you. The Home Secretary has told LBC that Britain will pay failed asylum seekers more money to leave the country if they cooperate with the system. It says new rules offering only temporary protection to adult refugees in the UK are coming into force this morning. LBC weather, patchy rain continuing in the west, drier in the east with some bright spells, a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
Whether your dreams involve epic adventure, trying something you've never done before, or just some time to fully relax, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences, thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
Lie.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
8:34. Come back to events, of course, involving the Middle East. Other aspects here in the UK. We're going to be in and among the Iranian community in North London. LBC's Henry Riley is there, testing them, taking the mood. And what are the Greens' deputy leader, triumphant, of course, last week in that by-election we were just discussing? The Greens' deputy leader joining what demonstration? But hang on, it's a pro-Tehran demonstration. Is this the true face of the Greens? Much to discuss. Let's come to other domestic matters. Britain is to pay failed asylum seekers more money to leave the country, as the Home Secretary has told LBC. Shabana Mahmood has refused to rule out paying up to £30,000 for families to leave willingly as an incentive in a bid to save the taxpayer money. Here with all the details, LBC's political editor, Natasha Clarke, who was with the Home Secretary in Denmark last week. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, you'll remember last year, the then new Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, outlining a string of what were seen as quite radical migration changes. She's now bringing those back to the Commons to become law in the coming weeks and months. So I went with her to Denmark last week to see how their system works. That's the inspiration for some of these changes. And I sat down with the Home Secretary to see what lessons she has learned and what we can try and implement here in Britain. And the main principle she wants to see is that refugee status, she says, should become temporary rather than a route to permanent citizenship after 5 years.
This is a big problem for us. We've got a broken asylum system and we have a legal migration system that's been open to unacceptable levels of abuse. So I've got to get both of these things into control again to give the public confidence that the state can run its own border.
And like Denmark, she told me that she wanted to see people paid even more to leave. And it could be anything between £3,000 and £30,000.
I know it sort of sticks in your craw, basically, to think that you're going to pay people who've come to your country illegally to leave and go back to their home country. To house somebody in asylum accommodation in a hotel, it costs £53,000 a year per person. Paying more than what we currently do is still going to be considerably less than what we're spending on these people staying in asylum hotels. Well, look, I haven't made any final decisions on what the right sum and the right sort of package will be for our country.
But it could be up to £30,000.
It will be more than what we currently offer.
But Nick, there are some limits to the Denmark system. One idea that they have over there, Nick, and actually they've implemented this already, where certain areas must be at least 50% Western, quotes there, their quotes there, basically to prevent certain communities from all living in certain areas. But however, that is something that Shabana Mahmood said she didn't want to see here.
We're not the sort of country where we're going to start passing laws about where particular kinds of people can and should not live. And I don't think that the success of integration comes from counting the number of brown faces or white faces or black faces in a particular street or in a particular neighbourhood. That's not the success of integration. The success of integration comes from whether our people are all able to speak English, access the labour market, have the right skills and are making a contribution.
I also spoke with the Danish immigration minister there, Rasmus Stoklund. He had some very forthright thoughts. He told me he didn't want children in Denmark growing up thinking that they could be living in a part of the Middle East and that Denmark is content, he says, with sending people back to Syria.
We are very keen on expelling people and sending more people back. That is that we don't want parallel societies, we won't accept them, and we won't accept that norms of imams or anyone else try to dominate areas of Denmark. They don't grow up in a part of Denmark which might as well could have been in part of the greater Middle East.
And this, of course, Nick, is linked to the discussions on Iran and what you've been saying today.
If you had that sort of language in the United Kingdom,
absolutely.
It's basically saying we don't want Copenhagen or Paris to look like Syria.
Exactly.
If someone came and said that in the UK, Natasha.
I know, yeah, it really shocked me when he said that, just in such a forthright way, you know, whether you agree with it or not.
And, sorry to interrupt your report.
No, not at all. You were completely right to point out that it was quite shocking language to hear from him. And he was talking about imams. He said he didn't want imams or any other culture trying to dominate areas of Denmark. So very, very radical in that way. But Nick, of course, this is linked to Iran and your discussions that you're having all morning today. In 2024, approximately 4,200 Iranians crossed the channel in small boats. So this is something that does in some ways end up on our shores. Now, Reform's Richard Tice said yesterday the British government needs to do more to support Iran. But would he support them if they came here on a small boat?
You would welcome them if they appear on small boats.
Let's back it to go right. That is what we've got to be totally focused on.
As you say, there are bumps in the road. So
there will be bumps in the road, and you keep supporting good people. That's what you do.
So not quite there from Reform's Richard Tice there. However, the Home Secretary bringing forward these plans today. So if you are applying for refugee status going forward, you'll have to reapply every 30 months. So it won't be a route to permanent citizenship. And if your country, like Syria, like potentially Iran, is deemed safe at some point, you will have to return home or apply for a new visa. And Nick, I'm told that the Home Secretary does face a rebellion from up to 40 Labour MPs who could vote against this when the legislation does come to Parliament. After that by-election, many people are thinking, we don't need to go to the right to fight Reform, we have to go to the left to fight the Greens. So we'll be hearing more from her on that later this week.
Just before I let you go, having been there with the Foreign Secretary, having been to Denmark, is it your sense that the Nick Ferrari and Natasha Clark of Radio in Copenhagen, when they have these conversations, it is more settled, and the Danish people actually are fully supportive of what we heard from those Interior Minister, I can't remember what it's called.
And they broadly are
in line, or is there quite open dissent about it?
So, yes, I think that they do generally agree with what it does. I think it's really hard to compare our systems just because the scale of Denmark is just so different. They've got a population of just 6 million people.
Not even London.
Exactly, and they had, I think, 1,900 asylum seekers apply for asylum last year alone. That's basically what we get in 2 days
in the UK.
Exactly, so it's really hard to compare it. However, they have seen their asylum applications drop significantly since they put in these reforms, and the people we spoke to do seem to agree with that.
Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor reporting. Let's stay with political matters. 8:40 is the time. Thanks, Natasha. And this idea from the losing Reform UK candidate, supported by his party leader, Nigel Farage, that effectively the Gorton and Denton by-election was sectarian. It was wrong. I think Nigel Farage writing in one newspaper, it was the worst example of sectarian voting he's seen in this country. Dominic in Cheltenham, Matt Goodwin saying Muslim voters choosing to vote for a party led by an openly gay Jewish man because their leaflets written in Urdu is laughable. This is, of course, Zach Polanski, who is openly Jewish and openly gay and is of Jewish origin. Dominic goes on, he's a sore loser, just trying to create more division. Ask Nigel Farage how he makes this make sense. No one is saying the family voting shouldn't be investigated. Let the process run its course. Then we can come to conclusions. Rebecca says, Matt Goodwin's party wants to change our voting to that of the increasingly authoritarian US. Trump's engaging in suppression in voting. He has no right under the Constitution. If we end up with a Reform government, then even Reform voters will find their future ability to vote will be difficult. All right, let's go to, certainly on a global footing, the largest story on the news agenda, and that of the Middle East and the developing situation. John's in Lewisham. John, let's back up to where we were, the early hours of Saturday morning, prior to that strike on the Ayatollah's compound. Your view of the actions taken by the US and Israel, supportive or not? Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Nick. I support President Trump, because those people criticizing President Trump are doing so because either they are not the one being killed or their families. This will teach the world that a new system is in place now. If you kill your demonstrators, your country people, because of your inability to manage your country and the people are protesting and you kill them at will, then the last of Trump will come on you. You have to pay the price. That's a very good stand. President Trump is the best president in the world so far.
All right. Just it's not the best alliance. Don't go, John. I don't know. President Trump is the best president in the on the world so far, is what John in Lewisham is saying. And the action had to be taken. Finally, John, and I'll keep it brief because your line isn't the greatest quality in the world. Do you think, though, that area is more stable or less stable as a result of Saturday?
Yes, it will be. Eventually, it will be, because President Trump will not let them alone. He will always put an eye. And the next coming government will be careful of the actions.
But without going back, and I know this is so easy, won't that just mean it's another Afghanistan?
No, it's not going to be, because President Trump, and the world leaders will not allow that to be. If the new government is formed and continue to run democratically, they will continue to address the problem that arises in their nation.
John, I really enjoyed our conversation. It's a shame the line is not sensational quality, so I must end it there. John, call me again later the week or next week or soon with hopefully a better line. Now, you talk about world leaders, John. Shall we talk about Putin? John in Deptford. Ruthless Trump pulls Khamenei to the table, then sticks the knife in. It would make a good film. This is Putin's plan. Similar theme here. From John in Hartlepool. Putin will be delighted with Trump and Netanyahu's illegal acts. It pushes up the price of oil, which Putin needs for funding his illegal war. It means the US can never cite international law in negotiations over Ukraine ever again. He's either so desperate to detract from his poll numbers and Epstein, he will do anything, including bombing Iran. Or he knows how this will benefit the Russian regime. And again, talking about world leaders, Sir Keir Starmer is in the sights of Jim Brown from Prestwick, who says Starmer is a clown of a man. He's put my Cypriot family and the entire country of Cyprus in danger by allowing the US to use the Akrotiri base. The people of Cyprus will not forgive this. Do keep them coming. Let's talk about the report that Natasha Clark filed, this idea of migration put forward by Shabana Mahmood. Derek's in North Allerton. The impact, Derek, what do you think? Hello.
Yes, good morning, Nick.
Hello, sir.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
Tell me why.
That they're prepared to pay between $5,000 and $30,000 to deport illegal immigrants. Now, isn't that just the opposite that might happen? Because somebody pays $5,000 or $10,000 to get here, and they get $30,000 to go back. I must be going mental.
Well, if you remember the report that we heard, ultimately, it could potentially be cheaper to do it that way, Derek.
No, but not as this encourages more and more people to come here.
No, I agree. So how should this problem be solved?
Well, we've had secretary after secretary all saying they're going to bust and smash the gangs. Mm-hmm. Not one of them has stopped the gangs. The only way to stop these gangs is when they pick them up in mid-channel, turn round and take them straight back. Mm. And you put them back on the boat.
And lastly, and I think a lot of people would agree with you, Derek, the problem is, what happens if the French won't take them?
Well, I'm sorry, just leave them there.
You are right. By simple mechanics of it, of course you are right. It's just what happens when they say no at Calais, or non at Calais.
Well, just let them get onto the beach, and then they've got that problem to sort out.
All right. Derek, thank you. Responding to Natasha's report, I'm not surprised it is a lot of money. We may continue with that. But coming up after the news, other ramifications of the situation in the Middle East.
Tens of thousands of British citizens are stranded in the United Arab Emirates, Qatar and elsewhere in the Gulf. What is being done to get them home? I'm Simon Calder, travel correspondent at The Independent with the latest.
You'll hear from Simon after this. It's 8:46 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Foreign Secretary has told LBC the UK has agreed to a US request to use British military bases for defensive strikes on Iranian missile sites. Yvette Cooper has told Nick the UK's decision complies with international law, but wouldn't comment on questions surrounding the legality of the US campaign. The Prime Minister made clear last night the UK is not joining the American offensive, but said the decision has been taken to protect British lives. Shortly after Sir Keir Starmer's announcement, RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus was targeted in a suspected drone strike. No injuries have been reported. LBC weather, patchy rain continuing in the west, drier in the east, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 18 at Chorley Wood to 17 at Maple Cross. It's because of an accident where two lanes are closed. Two lanes were closed on the M4 westbound at Junction 10 at the A329M following an accident. They've just this moment reopened, but it's still very slow from Junction 89 at Maidenhead. Delays on the M1 southbound to Junction 12 at Flitwick, and that's also after an accident. In Hamworth, there are queues on the Twickenham Road eastbound to Apex Corner. A car has broken down. The A13 still very slow westbound to Raynham after the accident from earlier. And on the underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line.
This is LBC.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've travelled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz. Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
Stay out all night! Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
The dance floor!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single vision lenses.
Nice move, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Wrong tool for the job? Don't make that mistake with your van. Get up to 30% off selected new Toyota vans and pickups with a warranty up to 10 years or 100,000 miles with every qualifying routine service. Visit your nearest Toyota centre or visit toyota.co.uk/van savings for more details. Savings on selected vans and pickups ordered by the 31st of March 2026. UK residents, see toyota.co.uk for full details. T's and C's apply.
With over 50 years' experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service, and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 to 9, we've talked a lot about the travel ramifications of events in the Middle East. Let's get straight to Simon Calder, travel correspondent for The Independent, author and broadcaster. Foreign Secretary told us almost an hour ago there's around 102,000 people who've registered on the necessary UK FCO websites. What's happening to them? What's the general picture? Simon, morning, Governor.
Good morning, Nick. So lots of those will be expatriates who are living in the affected nations. But of course, tens of thousands of them are actually people who've perhaps been on holiday, desperate to get back. Maybe they even got caught up flying in from somewhere like Bangkok or Mumbai or Australia, landed at either Dubai or Abu Dhabi or Doha and couldn't get the connecting flight because airspace closed. So I'm most definitely getting some steers about the way that the plan will run out if it appears that airspace is going to continue to be closed. Just arriving in the next hour or so at London Heathrow will be a special British Airways flight carrying their pilots and cabin crew who were stranded also on Saturday. BA sent out a plane overnight to rescue them from Muscat in Oman, which is regarded as safe by the Foreign Office. So they were bussed over there and flown back. Now, bear in mind that the Foreign Office is saying shelter in place. Do not travel. That means that at the moment, British people are being advised not to do that. However, I think if they can sort out some logistics at Muscat Airport and get some buses in place, you will see things starting to happen. And it's possible also from Qatar, from Bahrain and from Kuwait that you could have a similar operation involving flights out of Riyadh. So the idea is you get on a bus, you drive for hours across the desert, and then you are flown home.
Going back to my days as a schoolboy, my Collins Atlas, it would tell me this is probably quite a busy patch of air corridors across this region, Simon.
Oh, very much so. One of the most extraordinary things that I'm seeing, Nick, is that Afghanistan is suddenly back in the mix. Lots and lots of flights are going over the middle of Afghanistan because that is regarded as safe airspace now. Otherwise, flights are having to be routed round by the south of Saudi Arabia, which adds hours, costs fuel. There's lots of congestion there. It is an absolute mess. And bear in mind that every day that this goes on with those key Gulf hubs closed, half a million people are having their travel plans torn up. It really is desperate times. Of course, main concern with the people who are stranded in a place where missiles and drones are coming in to attack them. But for the tens of thousands of travellers who are stuck the wrong side of the Gulf trying to get home, it's also very anxious times.
Simon, thanks. Simon Calder, I know you have to be somewhere else. Travel correspondent for The Independent, author and broadcaster, 8:53. We'll come back to the So that's the travel. We did the financial in the first hour. That's the travel implication. Let's come back to the political, possibly the military aspects as well. Ali in Barnet. Well, we now know that Trump and Israel took the action. Do you support it? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Great show. Thank you for having me on the show.
Not at all.
I think the Islamic Republic repeatedly ignored any opportunity for dialogue and meaningful reform, shutting down space for any peaceful change for 47 years. Mm-hmm. And when a regime closes every door, every opportunity, and responds to dissent with repression, like killing over 35,000 of their own people in just 2 days, then the consequences are sadly predictable. So we could not get rid of this regime peace.
Hello, can you still hear me, Ali? I think we've lost Ali. The point I was going to make, thank you, Ali, if you can hear me, the point I was going to make was that Zach Polanski is reported as saying that the negotiations should have continued. He's openly critical of the position taken by Sir Keir Starmer. If we just work through... Again, Ali, if you can hear me, thank you, matey, but we can't hear you anymore. If we work through the position as outlined by the Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, a little over an hour ago, why do we suddenly move from a position of not supporting? Why the delay? Now, that is justified because after the killing and the bomb after Iran and the killing of the Ayatollah, suddenly partner states, others, and Britons were threatened by bomb strikes on other areas. So that justified, in the Foreign Secretary's view, or the government's view, I should say, as the Foreign Secretary outlined, that justified the position. So, but again, and here's an interesting one that we might take on. The operational support is only provided on a defensive basis. That is, again, to stop hotels being attacked, to stop strikes on where British people might live, be holidaying or work. But... Let's, for the purpose of debate, say that they are using RAF Greenford. We do know they're using Diego Garcia. She did. Do you really buy the idea that there will be some conversation between senior members of the RAF and senior members of the USAF, United States Air Force, to make sure that that's... And so that takes off as a defensive operation. Then in some way, I don't know, they come into contact with an Iranian jet or missiles or whatever it might be. Are they always going to stay on the defensive? Well, I would answer not. And what of this idea of international law? Is it a breach of international law? The Foreign Secretary was asked, as was her colleague, the Defence Secretary, John Healey, yesterday. And all you hear is that, well, it's for the United States of America to explain their position. How far does our support go? Well, only defensive area. Are we supportive of the fact of the way that the Ayatollah was killed? Well, it's a good thing that he's gone. No one is mourning the Ayatollah. Is this, as perhaps someone suggests... Is this the end game? Is this what you get if you have a government that's pretty much peopled by lawyers? So they're continually turning to their international law and international law books and not really driven by the politics of the situation. Now, you come back to other things that we heard from the Foreign Secretary. The IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. So we are supporting the United States
in defensive operations against the IRGC and anything else they might do, but we don't prescribe that as a terrorist organisation in this country. And as you heard from the Foreign Secretary, who, of course, previous job was as Home Secretary, she was very keen to do that, but it takes time for the legislation to go through. Why? The United States, Australia, Canada, they've managed to get it through. They're prescribed organisations there. Again, oh, here we go, we refer to the law books again. We have a government utterly obsessed and run by law. Now, should you be utterly, totally illegal in everything you do? No, that's not a good look either. But to be totally beholden in this fashion, we can't do this, we can't. You can even go to the Chagos Islands. Do you remember the conversation? Ah, oh, no, we can't do that, because that would be, if we weren't to return, if we weren't to do the deal to lease them, that would be a breach of international law. Well, we've just seen the importance of Diego Garcia. It's right there in front of our very eyes. The Prime Minister, who can't give it away quick enough, has just authorised the use for defensive operations for Diego Garcia, as confirmed to us by the Foreign Secretary. So, again, why are we giving that away? Oh, you're ahead of me. That is, again, because of our obligations under international law. Would it be so awful to have a politician instead of a lawyer? Let's feature. I've got a minute to feature some more of those emails that are coming in. Christopher in Cardiff, America and Israel are targeting and destroying the weapons manufacturing capability and storage sites in Iran. Russia will be struggling to get Iranian drones they use to attract Ukraine, and this could get very messy. Stuart shouts, this is the Epstein War. Israel and Russia have the compromat of Trump abusing his position. Russia used it to get Trump to do as little as possible in Ukraine. Israel have used it to get Trump to go to war in Iran. Trump has done it because now the US investigation will be closed down. Mel Wright in Medway, which is in Kent, says, my sister Katie and her partner David are on holiday in Cyprus, and I received this message, and I quote, base near us hit yesterday, hoping airport not targeted, RAF on standby to intercept. We're okay, I think. Hotel says all good, no evacuations and no government intervention for tourists. Well, that's the situation on the ground, and we'll continue to talk about that. But let's talk about events back here in the UK. A pro-Iranian regime protest taking place over the weekend. Pro-Tehran, attended by the Green Party's deputy leader, Mohsin Ali. So, does that have a red warning flashing light? A red light flashing, a warning over involvement of the Greens? And
thousands of British Iranians filled the streets of Finchley over the weekend, a part of North London often referred to as Little Tehran. I'm LBC's Henry Riley, speaking with members of the Iranian community here.
Those stories and, of course, events as they unfold after the 9 o'clock news here on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Foreign Secretary has told LBC the UK has agreed to allow Americans to use military bases for defensive strikes on Iranian missile sites. Yvette Cooper has told Nick the UK's decision does comply with international law, but she wouldn't comment on questions surrounding the legality of the US military action.
That's for them to set out the their assessment of the international law of their action. We have been very clear that the action that we are taking complies with international law. And as you'll know, we've even published some summaries of the assessment on in international law.
The government announced the use of military bases last night after previously refusing requests from Washington. But ministers insist this decision is not a U-turn, as the latest by the US is different to the original request. Former head of MI6, Sir Richard Dearlove, has told Nick the indecisive nature of the government is damaging Labour.
Government by human rights lawyers, which is what we're suffering in the UK now, is painful. When you see them trying to explain the difference between offensive, defensive, we should have been clear-cut from day one and supported the Americans and the Israelis unequivocally.
Officials say personnel and families living close to RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus are being moved out of a precautionary measure following a suspected drone strike last night. No injuries have been reported at the military base, which is used for operations in the Middle East. President Trump's told Americans that more US soldiers are likely to be killed in the military campaign. Three have already died in the action since the joint US-Israeli strikes started on Saturday. And it's been confirmed to LBC that more than 100,000 British nationals have now registered their presence in the Middle East with the Foreign Office as part of government plans to potentially evacuate people if airspace in the region remains closed. One more story this morning. The Home Secretary has told LBC that Britain will pay failed asylum seekers more money to leave the country if they cooperate with the system. Shabana Mahmood is due to outline her plans this week, which are modelled on the Danish policy. Ms Mahmood says she will push ahead with her plans despite calls for Labour to move to the left.
I do accept that some people are not comfortable with all of these reforms or don't agree, but I do believe that the totality of the package that I've already announced that I'm now implementing has a broad support across the country, is the right answer to the problems that the country faces.
And you can read more on this story on the LBC app. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 108 at 10,799. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.13. LBC weather, rain will move east across northern and western areas, dry, mild and sunny in the southeast, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Need anything from Tesco?
Snacks and milk, love.
How about discounts on holidays abroad?
Don't forget fruit and veg for our school.
Free nappies for premature babies.
And the quiet hour in store to shop in peace.
Can I get £2.50 cinema tickets on Tuesdays?
We know you need more than just groceries from us. We do all this because every little helps.
Need anything from Tesco?
Oh, yeah, do you want to get some?
For further information, visit tescoplc.com/need-anything-from-tesco.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Want you 3 minutes after nine on Monday, the 2nd of March. Coming up in this hour, the Green Party deputy leader is at a pro-Tehran demonstration over the weekend. Yes, you did hear that correctly, a pro-Tehran. So, not so much an anti-the killing, a pro-Tehran demonstration. You've got to go a long way, haven't you, to find someone who is in support of what was going on in Iran? Or have you? Is this the real face of the Greens? Staying with that conversation.
This is something everybody were anticipating to come. In one sense, this is something the Iranian government they ask for because they always threaten the Western country.
LBC's reporter Henry Riley has gone to what's known as Little Tehran, part of Finchley in North London, the Iranian community there, and will file a report later in the hour. And to get away, because I appreciate some of you think, well, there must be other stories, and there are, and there's a very important one. We need to talk about Epstein. Teachers and parents should be able to discuss Jeffrey Epstein's crimes with children and young people, or risk them looking for answers from dubious or dangerous sources, i.e. online. So, when you consider, and I can't even tell you some of the crimes of which Epstein has either been convicted or suggested or you've read about in the Epstein files. I can't even tell you because they're too offensive and take me off air. How on earth do you discuss that with children?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As Zach Polansky, the Green Party leader, calls on Sir Keir Starmer to condemn the strikes on Iran after branding them both US and Israel rogue states, his deputy leader, the party's deputy leader, was seen at a demo in London yesterday. Can we listen carefully? I can't... Can we make out exactly... By the way, it was Saturday. My apologies. Have a listen while I continue the conversation. Have a quick... Something... No. Can't get it. Can you get it? I can't get it. Something about illegal war? Anyway, that was Zach Polansky, who branded them rogue states. As I say, meanwhile, deputy leader of the Green Party was to be found on that rally. Now, the Greens leader was last year urged to sack Mr. Ali after he defended Hamas's October 7th attacks on Israel. Commenting on Mr. Ali's appearance at the rally, former security minister Tom Tugendhat says the Green Party is standing with those who murder young Iranians seeking a better life and freedom. Let's pick this conversation up with Jenny Baroness-Jones, Green Party peer, former Deputy Mayor of London, joining me now. When I think of the Green Party, genuinely, I always think of you because you and I have been discussing in robust fashion green issues, feels like, for two decades, Baroness Jones, if I may call you that. Is this the truth? Is this
don't
the truth?
Think as if you're wearing green frames on your glasses just for me, Nick. So I'm really happy about
that. I've been
them.
Rumbled. You've got me, Jenny. Is this the true face of the Green Party, then? Pro-Tehran?
I don't know where to start because some of this is so ludicrous. It's right-wing press who are furious at our having won the Gorton and Denton by-election. And so they're going for us as hard as they can. But they're using completely misleading accounts. Martin Ali, one of our deputy leaders, was at a Stop the War rally. He actually is anti-war, and as all Greens are. And we support the Iranian people, of course, in their quest for democracy and freedom, but that is not the same as bombing their country. And you know, you cannot bomb your way to democracy, and that's what President Trump is doing.
How do you alleviate the suffering of the Iranian people then?
Well, they are, to some extent, organising themselves. And I cannot believe anyone could seriously suggest that bombing their country and killing innocent civilians as well is a way to promote democracy. This is an illegal, unprovoked, brutal attack by the United States. And I can understand Keir Starmer saying that what we've allowed them to do to use our bases and so on is legal. I take his word for that because he's a lawyer, or was. But really, we cannot support the United States in this. And it seems to me that we are being dragged into yet another illegal war in the Middle East. And we know how the others turned out, really, really badly. A lot of British people killed.
You say this is a right-wing conspiracy. You've seen the video, the footage of Mr. Ali at the Long Live Iran demo with Iran flags flying in and around and above him.
It was a Stop the War rally. It is possible to get photographs, I'm sure, of me surrounded by all sorts of flags at various rallies. Well, yes, he was there. Of course he was, because he is anti-war. There are so many attacks on Motti. I mean, we all get attacked. I'm sure you do as well.
Of course I do. But it's the only reason I come to work is to read the emails that hate me. Sets me up for the day. It's like being my last wife. Anyway, do go on.
You know what? I used to block all these horrible things on social media.
No, don't let them get you. They're hilarious.
No, I don't anymore. I don't. At the minute I see it's a negative one, I just skip over it. Yes. Boring.
Hang on, you must agree, though, the fact that Khamenei is dead, the Ayatollah is dead, is a good thing. No one's mourning him.
No, definitely not. I mean, he was a
Then
vile...
why does your colleague, Mr. Ali, say it's deplorable?
Because it's deplorable taking out the leader of a country.
Hang on, you just said you agreed, as I am.
No.
He's an evil man. He's presided over the murder of thousands, the imprisonment of even more thousands. The world is I hate to be horrible doing it, but the world is a better place without him. Your deputy leader says it was deplorable.
It was deplorable.
Oh, this is another misquoting, is it? Here we go.
Hold on. This vile man was the leader of another country. It is not for the United States to go in there unprovoked and kill all sorts of their leadership. I don't want to see their leadership survive. But it's not the same as agreeing that America has the right to do that. And also, you use the word right-wing conspiracy.
I think you hinted towards that, respectfully, Jenny.
No. I wouldn't use the word conspiracy. But I just think... I'm sorry to keep talking about our Green Party winning Gorton and Denton, but the fact is...
Well done. Go on. Yeah, go on.
It has rattled the other political parties, even Labour. And Labour put out some really misleading leaflets, completely ignoring the group, saying we're the only ones who can beat reform. Now, clearly, they weren't. And it seems to me that the attacks on us are just going to raise our profile. And actually, we're coming up to local elections. I think we're going to do quite well in the local elections and in Wales on the Senate elections. And I think our anti-war stance is something that... I'm sure the majority of people in Britain do not want soldiers killed in another illegal war in the Middle East. It just seems crazy.
Lastly, more broadly, what should the British government's position be over the coming days, possibly weeks?
It's always difficult to know what they're going to do, isn't it? And so second-guessing them is hard. But I would have thought that they should not go any further. If it is illegal allowing our bases to be used for the for those retaliatory strikes or whatever they are, then I think that's absolutely as far as we go. And Keir Starmer has to get onto the phone to Trump and say, enough, enough.
All right. Great speaking with you. Thank you, Jenny. Baroness Jones, Green Party peer, former deputy mayor of London. I'll send you a pair of my green glasses in the post. Listening, John, now Lord Walney, UK's former independent advisor on political violence and disruption. What do you see as the true face of the Green Party? Lord Walney, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Well, on one level, I feel for Jenny Jones and all of those activists who have been part of the Green movement.
Yeah,
for,
she's a great person, Jenny Jones.
I mean, she will not thank me for saying this, but I really like her on,
so
a personal, on a personal level. But, you know, you are seeing there, and you saw it coming together in the by-election victory and then the immediate ugly aftermath of what this means for the Green Party, is that you have got now an unholy alliance, an unholy marriage between those traditional Green supporters who get out of bed every morning to save the planet effectively through environmental measures. And I may not agree with their tactics, their methods, the best way of doing that, but you can understand where they are coming from, with this effectively Islamist tranche of people for whom Mohsen Ali is clearly a leading member. And you saw the way that they drove some of that sectarian vote in the by-election, but then you see a senior deputy leader of the Green Party at that appalling rally on Saturday alongside Jeremy Corbyn. And it is not, I'm afraid it is really stretching credibility to say that that was just about opposing wars. They were people coming out on the
Can you hear me, Lord Warney? Lord Warney, can you hear me? I sense that means the line's gone on. One last time, Lord Warney. No? Okay. Well, let me ask you, Lord Warney, if you can hear us. We've had a couple of these, haven't we? John, Lord Warney, if you can hear us, thank you. You were the government's independent advisor on political violence and disruption. The question I was going to ask, Lord Warney, I now put to you, picking up on what Jenny Jones said. Fact, the Gorton and Denton by-election was a great victory for the Greens. There's no pretending other way. Stunning victory. So that's fact. Question. The fact that we're now having conversations like that, the fact that at least two, if not three, newspapers over the course of yesterday and today are highlighting the fact that the deputy leader of the party was at that rally on Saturday. Here's the question. Is that because the right wing is running scared and we're going to have to try and stop the Greens however we do it? Or is it the reality that when you achieve what you achieved on Friday morning, Thursday at the vote, Friday morning at the count, when you suddenly become of that level of national significance, well, you're going to get far more scrutiny, right? So if the official monster raving loony party, what was that name? Sir Oinkelot, I had to read when I did the list of candidates. Oh, by the way, I should tell you, the team pointing and roaring with laughter at me through the glass when I was desperately hoping that I would laugh, which is like a sacking offence. If where you go running through a list of candidates and standing is Arthur Farnsworth for the Labour Party, Nick Ferrari for the whatever it might be party, Sir Oinkelot, we'd have to do it all again. So they were desperate. Now, if Sir Oinkelot had won, isn't the reality we'd be crawling all over the official monster raving loony party, whatever they call themselves now. And if the deputy leader of that party was seen doing something questionable, he or she, surely isn't that the reality? That is the role of the media. Now you've done it, a real forceful job on Friday count, Thursday vote, Friday count. That's the reality of journalism, isn't it? We'll take your calls on that. And we're off to Little Tehran in Finchley.
Thousands of British Iranians filled the streets of Finchley over the weekend, a part of North London often referred to as Little Tehran. I'm LBC's Henry Riley, speaking with members of the Iranian community here.
9:15 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Foreign Secretary has told LBC the UK has agreed to a US request to use British military bases for defensive strikes on Iranian missile sites. Yvette Cooper has told Nick the UK's decision complies with international law, but wouldn't comment on questions surrounding the legality of the US campaign. The Prime Minister made clear last night the UK is not joining the American offensive, but said the decision has been taken to protect British lives.
Shortly after Sakir Starmer's announcement, RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus was targeted in a suspected drone strike. No injuries have been reported. LBC weather, patchy rain continuing in the west, drier in the east, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M1 southbound to Junction 12 at Flitwick. It's because of an accident where two lanes are closed. Very busy on the M20 eastbound to Junction 4 at Leybourne. A car's broken down, so one lane is closed for recovery. Very busy on the North Circular Road westbound heading towards Henley's Corner. A car was on fire earlier. That fire's out, but it's still very slow. On the Underground, the Piccadilly line is back up and running, but there are severe delays on the entire line, and that was after that signal failure from earlier, but at least you can now get to and from Heathrow Airport on the Underground. And Piccadilly line trains and district lines aren't stopping eastbound at Barons Court.
This is LBC.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
Sunday Leaguers, dog lovers, bait clubbers, banger dancers, baby ravers, potters.
Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research.
Sign up to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event from just $14.99. Search Race for Life. Prices vary by event, distance and participant age.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
You know, Kayak isn't just another flight comparison app. When you download the Kayak app, you download flight enlightenment. With Kayak, you see things others can't, like the latest great deals from both airlines and booking sites. You can filter your searches and set up price alerts so you... Not now.
Oh, sorry.
So you're notified when there's a price drop on the flights you want. See more, do more, save more with Kayak. You can do the gong now. Download the Kayak app today and go see for yourself.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Look at these two emails as they come in. I'm so sorry, two texts. Abdul, listen to Nick and have shame. There are millions mourning this hero Ayatollah. Better man than Trump, Netanyahu and many racist, evil European leaders. Meanwhile, Debbie in Tel Aviv, what planet are some of your callers on? The regime that supported just killed thousands and thousands of people. It's a cop-out to be anti-war. Ask, should we have been anti-war and ignored the Nazis too? Those are the different views. Should we pick up on the Greens? Now, some people say, and I like Jenny Jones, Baroness Jones, but it's so predictable. Oh, it's the right-wing media conspiracy because they're doing so well. They'll do everything. And that is certainly a view. It's a bit of a narrow view because success brings scrutiny. Fact, right? You suddenly become the manager of Arsenal, suddenly become the person who runs Tesco's or something. You're going to attract scrutiny. They pulled off a tremendous success last week, so obviously they're now going to be held to a far greater degree. I use the example again. If the monster-raving loony party had won on Thursday, or on Friday's count, they would be very carefully monitored now. Ben's in Sutton. Ben, your take on this. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call.
Not at all.
So, I listened with wonderment.
Oh.
The absolute insistence this is down to a right-wing media plot to destabilise the Greens.
Yes.
They've won one by-election. They have one additional MP. Whilst it's a nice majority to have, it is not an absolute victory for all who sit in the Green Party, because now you have the spectre of people who are producing content online, yep, attending demonstrations for the sakes of whatever their own personal agenda may be, and flouting what the Green Party actually stood for, which is environmental issues, which are quite laudable in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Then to turn around and say, well, it is a stop the war thing. It certainly isn't. I mean, this is not stop the war. This is purely pro-Iran. It was a pro-Iranian meet, and to come out and say it's stop the war is disingenuous to anyone who genuinely believes that no war should ever be committed.
Ben, let me ask you, how likely or otherwise is it that they will stand up to the level of scrutiny that will now be afforded to them and that rightly is afforded to Reform UK and many of their leaders, many of their senior members?
Well, I mean, when you pore over the new weekend newspapers, there is actually a person within the Green Party now, I won't name names because it's unverified, but they are the senior media team who have been on record to say that some of the atrocities in October never took place.
Yes, I saw that story, yes.
Now, you could also additionally say at this point that the scrutiny they're taking isn't enough, because internally they clearly haven't vetted some of these comments that people have made in the past. It isn't difficult this day and age with modern technology and AI to do a deep dive on someone's past history, but to not even come out and backtrack publicly on that suggests that they have no compunction whatsoever about any comments made in the past. This is a one-track party now.
Well, you see, it's interesting. Don't go, Ben, because Reform can be seen by many as a one-track party. Quite rightly, all the people that they were put forward, quite rightly, were held to a lot of inspection, and we discovered people with, in some instances, criminal records, or in some instances, charges, serious crimes that they'd been charged with, not even convicted, and they were rightly booted out. All that's happening is the same now for the Greens, and yet it's meant to be a right-wing conspiracy, is what they bleat.
Well, if that was the case, if it was a right-wing conspiracy, then quite frankly, you'd see a lot more in the press about this.
Well, we'll see how it develops. Ben, thank you. I think we're battling with you on a line, or a train line or something, but you've done brilliantly. Thanks for getting your points across. More calls coming this. Martin, you'll be the next caller, but at risk of losing that line, let's go elsewhere, and let's go to somewhere, well, known as Little Tehran. LBC's Henry Riley reports from that part of London. Henry, where are you? Good morning.
I'm in Finchley, Nick. A very good morning to you. It's estimated there are around 115,000 Iranian-born residents in the UK, and the largest concentrated number of which live in the North London borough of Barnet, which includes where I am here in Finchley. The local authority believe around 12,000 people in this area were born in Iran, hence, as you mentioned earlier on, that affectionate nickname of Little Tehran. Over the weekend, thousands of British Iranian revelers filled Finchley, in particular here on Ballard's Lane. Here you'll find Iranians who run local restaurants, cafes, convenience stores, butchers, greengrocers and laundrettes. And this is what locals here this morning have told me.
I'm happy he died, but not with American Israel. I prefer the people of Iran. They shut down them, not another country. This is, I think, is illegal. It's not good. I'm not accept this one.
So you're happy he's dead, but you're not happy with the way it was done, the military action.
Yeah.
What did you make of all the developments over the weekend with the killing of the Ayatollah, for example?
Well, I think this is something everybody were anticipating to come. In one sense, this is something the Iranian government, they ask for, because they always threaten the Western country.
So on Ballard's Lane, there was a lot of activity. There were people celebrating here.
Yeah, celebrating here in the street. Yeah. They are celebrate outside until midnight, until 3:30 a.m. or right. 4. Yeah, they are dancing. They are very happy, very happy. I'm very happy.
Thank you so much.
Because Ayatollah is dead and everybody now is free.
Our family in Iran, they are have too much problem with this terrorist, and now they are happy, we are happy as well. If our family happy, we are happy.
And Nick, here on Ballard's Lane, many of the businesses and homes are donned with flags of the Lion and the Sun, the flag of Iran before the Islamic Revolution.
LBC's Henry Riley reporting from Finchley. Let's come back to the level of scrutiny now put towards the Green Party in the light of success, conspiracy, or just the way journalism works. Martin's in Rotherhithe. Which is it, Martin? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm grand. Well, I'm not grand because the world's in a state of flux and I don't really want to see it get any worse. But we must discuss what we must discuss. What do you make of the scrutiny of the Greens now?
Well, I think it's welcome. I mean, you know, the Green Party that you and I would have grown up looking at, you know, that was all about the environment, animal rights, things like that. Well, that party is no longer in existence. I mean, this has been happening for a couple of years, but it was really noticeable at the local elections last May when you were seeing Green councillors elected in certain parts of the country. You were then seeing footage of them in the polling stations screaming Allahu Akbar afterwards. Mm-hmm. So this has been happening for a while, and they're basically now becoming the vehicle for the far left and a small chunk of the Muslim population that are quite radical. That's the voter coalition that they've now got.
How healthy or otherwise is that?
It's not, and it's also a really weird mix, because you've got some people that are in the Green Party that are, you know, really pro-LGBT issues, the whole trans stuff, and then you've got sort of angry radical Muslims that view that with absolute disdain. I mean, it's quite an explosive coalition of voters, and it's not coherent at all.
Where do you see it going? How will they deal with the scrutiny that's likely to be continually heaped on them?
Well, they're going to have to get used to it, because I'm a reform supporter, and you know, whenever a reform member or a reform activist or councillor says something stupid somewhere, it gets highlighted. So they're going to have to get used to it, because they're going to get a hell of a lot of scrutiny now, and it needs to happen, because reform get a lot of scrutiny. Some of it, you know, it's their own fault, because people say stupid things.
Are they deserving of that level of scrutiny, or do you sometimes have your head in your hands and say, no, this is effectively a hatchet job on reform?
There have been times when I've thought that, but, you know, we live in a 24/7 media world, the internet. There's always going to be stuff out there. You just have to get used to it.
Grateful for your input, Martin. Thank you. Staying with my conversation about the Greens, we spoke with Jenny Baroness Jones. James in West Hampstead picked up. Jenny Jones says, you cannot bomb your way to democracy. That is exactly how we defeated the Nazis in the Second World War. Good job the Greens were nowhere near power in 1939 to 1945. Heaven help us if they get near power now. Similar point from Megan. The Green representative just said you can't bomb your way to democracy. How does she think Germany became a democracy, or Serbia? Is sometimes might is right? Question mark. Let's take one more call before the news. John's in Coventry. You want to speak more broadly about what the UK does now, John. So what does the UK do now? Morning, John.
Nick, I mean, we've got to align with the USA, isn't it? I mean, the thing is, like you say, it's a great wheeze for all of these axis of evil, if you like, to sort of see us all divided and arguing against ourselves. But they're all aligning with each other. They're selling each other oil. They're discounting. And it's a nefarious world we're living in now. But I mean, like the point Starmer made this morning, he's sort of saying we've got to defend ourselves and we've got to let the bases be leased out to the Americans. Last week he said exactly the opposite. I mean, what's he going to do? He's going to sit there with a big A4 bundle on top of his head while missiles are flying over the top of the UK. It's ridiculous.
Well, the Foreign Secretary told us that because the position of the United Kingdom government changed because partner nations were being attacked and there were British citizens in places such as Bahrain and elsewhere. That's why. That's her rationale. Take from that what you will. How do you respond?
That's a relief, isn't it? Lucky we didn't have anything flying over our heads at the weekend when Iran said the world's going to have a big surprise, you know. So, yeah, I mean, they've got to get on it, haven't they? They've got to wake up.
I think a lot of people would say that. John, thank you. Have yourself a good day. Coming up after the news, we move away. We will stay, of course, watching it and take some calls, but we move to other matters. We've got to talk about Epstein, Jeffrey Epstein. Parents and teachers need to be able to tell children about it. But here's a question. How would you explain... the grotesque crime for which he was convicted and the crimes it's believed he was associated with to children? We'll have a go after this. 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
The Foreign Secretary says she's confident the UK's decision to allow America to use the UK's military bases to strike Iranian missile sites is legal. But speaking to LBC, Yvette Cooper wouldn't tell Nick whether she believes the United States action is a breach of international law. The Prime Minister made the announcement about UK bases last night, confirming that the US will use them for defensive strikes. Sir Keir Starmer made clear that the UK is not joining the American offensive, adding the decision has been taken to protect British lives. Officials say personnel and families living close to RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus will be moved following a suspected drone strike overnight. No injuries have been reported at the military base, which is used for operations in the Middle East. And one other story for you. New rules offering only temporary protection to adult refugees have come into force in the UK this morning. Cases will be reviewed every 2.5 years and they'll be required to return to their home country if it's deemed safe. LBC weather. Patchy rain will continue in the west, drier in the east with some bright spells, but feeling breezy. A high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Away from the global conflict, but an equally challenging or testing idea. How would you tell children about Jeffrey Epstein? Teachers and parents need to be able to discuss his crimes with children and young people, or risk them looking for answers from dubious or even dangerous sources. So say experts who will host the first public seminar for schools on the issue this week. Thrive, the education consultancy hosting the online seminar, said many children, and I'm quoting, many children and young people encountering this material often without context, warnings or adult support, leaving educators to manage the emotional and safeguarding impact in real time. Now, let's be honest about it. Epstein's crimes, I think you'd probably have to live on another planet not to have heard something about them. The crimes for which he was convicted are pretty grotesque. The crimes, which we'll never ever know, but are contained and alleged in the so-called Epstein files, are even worse. So, if a child, what should we say, 7, 8, 9, something like that, certainly 10, 11, 12, daddy, mummy, or whatever, what did this man do? I don't quite understand. His picture's on the paper, and he's linked with someone who knows the king, and he's linked with this man who seems to be quite grown up in politics. I don't, what is it, why are all these police officers doing all this? What would you say? Well, let's turn to Dr. Nehira Krauss, who's a consultant clinical psychologist and founder of the mental health charity STEM4. That's STEM with the number 4 on the end. STEM4. And Dr. Krauss joins me now. Thanks for coming on, Doctor. This is a really complex one, and I'm not quite sure how would you start, but hopefully you can give us some pointers. What do you need? Okay. What areas can you go to? And what areas is it best not to go towards? Good morning.
Good morning. It is a really complex area, and what I would say is that it's important to keep a number of factors in mind. The first is the age of the child, because the understanding and the emotional response is going to be different at whatever age. The second, I think, is to do with the content. Now, it is not important for children to know all of the gory details of the content. What's important is to examine the impact of that content on that child and the reason for why you're saying it. And the third, I think the most important, is actually who provides that content, because it needs to be someone who makes the child feel safe, the child or young person, and someone that they feel they can ask more questions from, and also can provide them with the support that they might need as it unfolds.
What sort of support might be necessary to provide, Doctor?
I think it depends on the child's circumstances and on what they might have seen. So if they've accidentally stumbled upon some distressing images, for example, it might be very scary for them in terms of what they've encountered. If it's something that, you know, you're older and there's an issue around consent, which perhaps the young person themselves might have experienced, then the impact of that's going to be very difficult, different too. So in terms of the support, I think it's about parents, carers and educators all being on the same line of they're going to listen, they're going to think about what content they provide, they're going to be reassuring. And then if you have a child who's experienced trauma in their life, or indeed if there's been any sort of inappropriate sexual or non-consent experiences, then they need to have some extra support.
Doctor, you're involved with the charity STEM4. This is being put together by a consultancy, Thrive. How supportive are you of what they're going to attempt to do later this week?
I don't know all the content, but I think what they're doing is they're raising awareness with educators based on their results of their research. If educators are uncertain of the best way to approach this, it's helpful. So schools already teach about consent, but it needs to be again done in, is this the best context to do it in? Is it helpful in a classroom setting? Which teacher provides it? So I think if there can be some pointers in terms of this sort of emotional literacy, it can be extremely helpful.
The organization, sorry doctor, say again.
No, and for parents as well, to have some pointers in terms of what to say and what not to say.
Lastly, the organisation says it's doing it, otherwise they fear youngsters, and I think possibly here we might be looking at early teens, mid-teens, they'll go elsewhere, and there's a real danger if they start searching online. How real is that danger as you see it?
That danger is real because, of course, there's, as you said at the beginning of the conversation, there's plenty of information that's unfiltered that they can access. So it is important. It's part of being able to also look at, you know, respected sources of communication, what might be being said, and to know how to approach a kind of trusted adult with regards to what they might see and to kind of check that content out.
The mental health charity is STEM4, with the number 4 on the end. Dr. Nihira Krause is a consultant clinical psychologist and founder of that charity. This comes in as we're talking from... Yes, Jess says, I was babysitting a 10-year-old girl at the weekend, and she mentioned Jeffrey Epstein, his crimes and links to Donald Trump multiple times. These kids know about this stuff from online. There's no harm in it being explained in an age-appropriate way. It actually made me feel really sad that as a young girl she's aware that being connected to a paedophile and accused of disgusting crimes against women essentially means nothing, because you could become the leader of the most powerful country in the world. Kids shouldn't have to know about it. Let's just make it plain there. Of course, that there are no illegality impugned or implied in any fashion towards Donald Trump's past friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. We've all seen those photographs, but I want to make it absolutely plain, whatever that little girl was asking about, that would not imply that. The more emails coming in on that, but people have been hanging on for a long time, to talk about events in the Middle East. Ali is in Manchester. Ali, how does this affect you? Good morning. Ali? Are we having problems today? One last time, Ali? Okay, let's try this one. Peter in Bushy Heath. Peter?
Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Peter. What is it you're going to tell me?
First of all, I want to congratulate you. Because I regularly listen to you in the morning. Nobody else do I listen to.
Oh, bless you.
Because I think I'm amazed you're so fair-minded and level-headed and polite.
Well, that's because of my mother, I assure you. That was drilled into me.
And it's wonderful. Look, listen, I'm Jewish.
Yes.
I have I have obviously relatives and friends in Israel.
Yes.
And I'm amazed at the naivety and stupidity of people who are phoning up, including government ministers, who won't sign.
What have you heard that's naive or stupid that's annoyed you today, Peter?
Well, we have two threats in this country, one from Putin and one from Iran.
Right.
They're the two threats to us.
Right.
With their support of terrorism throughout the Middle East and everywhere else. And I'm fed up with it. And I speak to people, I speak to Iranians in this country over the last few months, and they're all of them want to get rid of the Ayatollah and this oppressive regime. And
the problem is what happens next, Peter.
I'm told that about, they tell me that about 90% of Iranian people want that way.
Yes. The problem is, Peter, what happens next, sir?
Listen, I think, thank God, Trump has supported the Israelis, and they've realised that now is the best time to do something about it, because we cannot carry on like that. The threat of them having nuclear weapons, and we've seen the weaponry they've got at their disposal to send over to other countries. It's time that everyone woke up and realise they are a tremendous threat to all of us. And not that this government's not a threat to all of us, because they're useless.
All right, Peter. Thank you. Exposing some of the stupidity and naivety that you think you heard. Grateful for your input. Let's try again. Ali in Manchester. Ali?
Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Thanks for taking the call.
Not at all. Glad we got through to you. Now, why is this affecting you so much?
As an Iranian, obviously, is affecting me. But, Nick, let me just ask you a quick question. Mm-hmm. When people come and say this is a war, firstly, it's not a war or attack, right? Nick, please, with all due respect, right? Yes. This is a request. A request from 80 million people trapped in Iran, who's asking, rescue us. This is a rescue mission. This is not the attack. The attack, when you can say this is a war or attack, when people inside the country who are not willing, right, to receive such a help, and then you can say, okay, we're going to war, we get rid of the regime. Yes, sir.
How else do you describe military airstrikes and bombing and drone attacks?
Look, let me remind you of something. Normandy, right? How Europe become free from Nazi?
Yes.
How do you define that, sir?
No, but that was a war. But I'm saying this is...
Yeah,
you won't allow this to be a war, you said.
Look, Nick, people come to the streets peacefully for past 47 years.
Mm-hmm.
What did they get? Bullet in their forehead.
Yeah.
What they were asking peacefully...
I'm not supporting the regime for a second, Ali. I'm just saying, why weren't you allowed to be called a war?
This is not the war. This is the rescue mission. Sorry, this is the rescue mission for 80 million people who don't have gun and missiles to face this regime.
What do you hope happens next?
People can decide. When you get it off this regime...
They can't decide at the moment.
No, they can. We've got the leader.
You'd be very brave to start demonstrating in Tehran, because, as you rightly say, you could get shot.
Exactly. So when you get it off this regime, this brutal regime, we've got the leader, okay, at the moment, outside, the prince, the exiled priest.
Yeah.
Exactly. Who defined that... I will let this protest, or whatever you want to name it, to the point that the battle, the ballot, will make a decision for Iranian, 80 million Iranian people after this regime is gone away.
Well, let's hope that whatever happens minimises killing on all sides and is swift as possible. Thank you, Ali. I can understand why you feel it so closely. We'll have more calls on this, of course, after the 9:45 LBC News headlines read by Dominic Ellis.
The Foreign Secretary has told LBC the UK has agreed to a US request to use British military bases for defensive strikes on Iranian missile sites. Yvette Cooper has told Nick the UK's decision complies with international law, but wouldn't comment on questions surrounding the legality of the US campaign. The Prime Minister made clear last night the UK is not joining the American offensive, but said the decision has been taken to protect British lives. Shortly after Keir Starmer's announcement, RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus was targeted in a suspected drone strike. No injuries have been reported. LBC weather, patchy rain continuing in the west, drier in the east, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M25 traffic is being held in both directions between junctions 11 at Chertsey and the Cobham services. It's because of an ongoing investigation and that's causing delays. And then over on the Essex stretch, traffic is being held anti-clockwise between junctions 28 at the A12 and 27 at the M11. And that's because of an accident and there are lengthy queues on the approach. In Hampshire, there are delays on the M271 southbound at junction 1 and that's because of an accident. The exit slip road has just been closed. In Bedfordshire, there are lengthy delays on the M1 southbound, pretty much all the way from junction 13 at Bedford to junction 12 at Flitwick. It's because of an accident.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
The global question, why has Donald Trump bombed an enemy that he said had been completely vanquished last year? And the local question, should Keir Starmer have offered any support?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Need anything from Tesco?
Snacks and milk, love.
How about discounts on holidays abroad?
Don't forget fruit and veg for our school.
Free nappies for premature babies.
And the quiet hour in store to shop in peace.
Can I get £2.50 cinema tickets on Tuesdays?
We know you need more than just groceries from us. We do all this because every little helps.
Need anything from Tesco?
Oh, yeah, do you mind if I get some?
For further information, visit tescoplc.com/needanythingfromtesco.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
The Philly cheese stack is back at McDonald's and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese, add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions and even more cheese. The Philly cheese stack. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
The Henry sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at Hillary's.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
You're driving down the back roads of Tuscany. The sun's setting, the wind's in your hair. You're playing your favourite tunes. No, not that one. Much better. Could life be any sweeter? Of course it can. With the money you saved by comparing car hire prices through Kayak, you've got more to spend on some fresh, creamy gelato. Mmm, we'll take due scoops, per favore. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon, opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth. Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
We've been talking about the importance of making some of the Epstein files relevant to children so they know exactly what's going on. Shah in Birmingham, explaining Epstein is very important to young children to make them aware of the possible risks from people in power, position and anything else. That's actually very, that's a very point one. What's more important, of course, are the complete cover-ups that are taking place. Graham in Bushy has picked up on the fact that the deputy leader of the Green Party chose to go to a pro-Tehran demo on the weekend. Graham says, I'm surprised Mohsen Ali didn't try to use the Jeremy Corbyn excuse when he was in Tunisia at the cemetery where terrorists who killed the Israeli athletes at the Munich Olympics are buried for a wreath-laying ceremony. He said he was present but not involved. That didn't wash for him, and it's clear where the Greens are now, where they are no longer just an eco-party. I think you're right, Graham, but at the moment, if you look at the polls, it seems to be working pretty well for them. But is it the path that a true Green would follow? We might return to that. But if we're talking about rallies, Natalie's in Wembley. I understand you were at one on the weekend. Is that right? What was the rally you were at? Good morning.
Hi. So there was one in Golders Green as well as the one in Finchley. And what happened was last week I drove through Golders Green and I noticed there were a lot of people standing by a wall with pictures and candles and flowers. Mm. I parked the car and went to look and it was all pictures of people who had been killed in Iran.
Right. Right.
So okay. When news happened on Saturday evening, I thought, I'll go back there and see if there's anything happening
of
there.
Of course, yeah.
And there was lots of people waving the Persian flag, the one with the lion.
Mm-hmm.
And it
that's
was
the flag,
almost
pre the regime flag sort of thing. That
yeah.
Was there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the feeling there was of hope, almost a celebration, but with the backdrop of all the dead people, I wouldn't want to use the word celebration, but it was certainly hope.
Right.
And motorists were tooting
support. What were people saying? When you had got into conversation with some of those who were at the demo, what were they telling you, Natalie?
I didn't get into conversation. Oh, I walked along the wall again, just sort of out of respect.
Mm.
I can only describe the mood. I didn't actually have a conversation with anyone.
What do you hope?
Oh, there was also a lot of, I think the area, there's a lot of Jewish people who live there, so they were out on the street.
Yeah, there would be
standing there in support.
Yeah. What do you hope happens next?
I don't really want to give a political opinion, but from a humanitarian point of view, you know, it's been tragic what's been happening in Iran over the last few months, the last year. I mean, it hasn't just started now. It's been happening for years.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that brings an improvement there is welcome.
I totally agree. Natalie, thank you. And telling us what went on at that rally in Golders Green. Sherry's in Rickmansworth. You've got a personal interest in this, I'm told, Sherry. What is it? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for taking my call. My interest is, you had the other caller earlier on who was trying or did explain the situation as it is in Iran. And I am one of the demonstrators that has been going through the last 67 weeks, either in front of the parliament or outside number 10 doing the walk. The situation in Iran is quite unbelievable, the way the regime has carried on for the past 47 years. And now I'm grateful that Israel and Trump has given a helping hand. The gentleman said it's not a war. Well, it started as a civil war because of the Iranian inside against the regime. It didn't work. So now Israel and America is helping us to get rid of this regime. And the only country we were hoping or still hoping, hence why we're doing demonstration, is UK government. But we're not receiving none whatsoever. And their excuses is because of the British Iranian. We don't want to kill anymore. This is beyond that now.
What needs to happen immediately now?
Well, the regime has to be destroyed, gone. 47 is enough. 47 years is enough. The regime completely has to be destroyed, a new leader.
That's so easy for us to say here in the United Kingdom, isn't it? How is that actually to be brought about on the ground, do you imagine, Sherry?
As in the ground within the country?
In Iran.
Sorry, I didn't quite understand the question.
So that's very easy for us to say that that's what we think would be the future, but how is that actually meant to happen? How can we bring that about?
If UK government agreed and decided to help rather than help the terrorists in Iran, we can start.
I mean, there's almost a separate conversation. This, I mean, Sherry, how relevant is the United Kingdom? Bear in mind, the Foreign Secretary told me a couple of hours ago. The United Kingdom wasn't even consulted prior to the strike on the Ayatollah's compound. The British government found out with the rest of us probably when they heard it on the news.
Okay, but recently I was watching Sky News and the ambassador was asked about why they're not supporting Iranian with Israel and Trump, and their excuse constantly to the journalist was we don't want to kill any more British people. And that is not good enough. We have terrorists in this country. We cannot, if they've been kept hostage in this country, they cannot continue anymore. After 47 years, enough is enough.
Enough is enough. That'll have to be enough for now, Sherry. I look forward to speaking with you again. Thank you, Malik in Leicester. Malik, your point. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Malik. And my point is, same old story, same old script. We played with the new people. We heard this story in Afghanistan, up to 250,000 people ending up on UK and Europe shores. Mm-hmm. We heard the same story in Iraq, weapons of mass destruction, up to 250,000 people ending up on UK and European soil.
Yeah, we heard it in Serbia. We heard it in Lebanon. Serbia. We heard it in Serbia, and that, broadly speaking, probably saved genocide. So that was good. Yeah.
We heard this story in Lebanon.
No, you're not listening. We heard it also in Serbia, and that stopped a genocide, so that's good. Yeah. So it can work. So your
no,
point?
No, it can't. No, it can't.
Well, try
no,
telling that.
And I tell you, give me one minute, and I'll shut up. This is the story. This is the script repeated constantly for the past three decades, to pursue agenda of one country, and I would like to take this opportunity to congratulate Israel to become a greater Israel. You know, from up until the Euphrates River and capturing the resources and making European and UK soils as a refugee camp for all over the Gulf region. Libya becomes the corridor for the people to be transported into Europe. Now, you and British people should be ready for having another up to 250,000 people in UK.
Okay, you've had your little under a minute. What do we do about Iran getting possible nuclear bomb and killing its own citizens?
That's for the people of Iran
to
decide.
Oh, don't be so silly, Malik. They get shot when they protest. So now let's be a grown-up. What are we meant to do when they're murdering their own people?
I am telling you this. The same thing happened in Bangladesh.
No. What are we meant to do? The Iranian government admits to killing 5,000 of its own citizens. There seem to be credible reports that it's more like 35,000. What is to be done about that?
Again, people of the country decide.
What do you not understand, Malik? If you suddenly decided to go to Victoria Park in Leicester and protest against a government, if we were living in Iran, you would be shot dead. You cannot walk around Vicky Park protesting. So what don't you understand?
What I do not understand is this, that why is America going to a particular country? Why is America not going to all the other places of trouble? Why is it not going to Ukraine?
Ukraine, of course, it's supplying the sort of weaponry, and it's teetering on the edge of possibly getting deeper involved in Ukraine. But it's wrong to say the Iranians are just top of them, because they get killed if they try. Malik, have yourself a safe day. I sense you had the last word from me, but I know the conversation will continue through the course of the day, and I would think almost certainly something to which you will return at some point tomorrow. Now, if you missed today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the app for free from your app store now. James O'Brien's The Other Side of the News on LBC. I am back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. It is, not for the first time, hard to know where to start, except perhaps with the observation that it is almost impossible to analyse the antics of people who are incapable of telling the truth. It was in June of last year, not like 6 years ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago. It was barely 9 months ago that Benjamin Netanyahu, fresh, of course, from his genocide in Gaza, announced a historic victory which will stand for generations after that 12-day war on Iran. So was he lying then, or is he lying now when he claims that there is an urgent necessity to do what has been done? And Keir Starmer, similarly, perhaps, has shifted from saying we can't support it to, well, we'll support it a bit.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. The Foreign Secretary has defended the decision to allow the US to use UK military bases for defensive strikes on Iranian missile sites. The government previously refused Washington's requests. Yvette Cooper has told LBC this morning the change in policy is in part aimed at saving British lives.
We have seen this escalation by the Iranian regime, and we've got 300,000 British citizens, often holiday makers, and as a result of the closure in airspace are not able to return home. And that's why we have said we would provide the support for defensive action, and that is crucial.
President Trump has told Americans that more US soldiers are likely to die in its military campaign against Iran. Three personnel have already been killed since the joint US-Israeli strikes started on Saturday. Mr. Trump says combat operations against Tehran will continue until all combat objectives are complete. Former UK National Security Advisor Lord Ricketts has told LBC the UK needs to keep lobbying for a diplomatic solution.
The Gulf is very vulnerable to continued Iranian attacks. The longer this goes on, the more dangerous it is. So let's get back to the negotiation, which Iran was involved with when Americans decided to strike. Let's try and get some kind of resolution which will allow the people to build a new government which is much more respectful of their rights. But that has to come from within. You can't change regimes with airstrikes.
UK defence officials say people living close to RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus will be moved as a precautionary measure following a suspected drone strike overnight. No injuries have been reported at the military base, which is used for operations in the Middle East. More than 100,000 British nationals have now registered their presence in the Middle East with the Foreign Office as part of government plans to potentially evacuate people if airspace in the region remains closed. Travel correspondent for The Independent, Simon Calder, has told LBC the closure is having a huge impact.
Bear in mind that every day that this goes on with those key Gulf hubs closed, 500,000 people are having their travel plans torn up. It really is desperate times. Of course, main concern with the people who are stranded in a place where missiles and drones are coming in to attack them. But for the tens of thousands of travellers who are stuck the wrong side of the Gulf trying to get home, it's also very anxious times.
One other story, failed asylum seekers who have entered Britain will be paid more money to leave the country and cooperate with the system. The Home Secretary, Shaban Mahmood, is due to outline plans to tighten immigration controls later this week. The new proposals are modelled on Danish policy. You can read more on this on the LBC app. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 97 at 10,813. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.13. LBC weather, rain will move east across northern and western areas, dry, mild and sunny in the southeast, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
In a world of noise and uncertainty, IG is the investment platform that backs you. Take our flexible stocks ISA, which gives you the freedom to withdraw funds anytime and replace them in the same tax year, all without losing your £20,000 tax-free allowance. And if that's not enough, pay no commission on your stocks, shares and ETFs when you invest with IG. IG. Trade. Invest. Progress. Your capital's at risk. Other fees may apply. Tax treatment depends on individual circumstances and is subject to change.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Our president will start a war with Iran because he has absolutely no ability to negotiate. He's weak and he's ineffective. So the only way he figures that he's going to get reelected, and as sure as you're sitting there, is to start a war with Iran.
Wow, I suppose even a stop clock is right twice a day, although Donald Trump in that clip from 2011 was, of course, talking about Barack Obama, who didn't start a war with Iran. And, of course, this is essentially the second time that Trump has either started or indeed joined a war with Iran. The last time was all those epochs, ages ago, in June of 2025, which led his ally Benjamin Netanyahu to declare a historic victory which will stand for generations. So where do you even start on a day like today? I think the most important, there are two things I'd begin with. The first is the near impossibility of accurately analysing activity undertaken by terrible, terrible people. and barefaced liars. It makes it almost impossible to get a bead in a traditional sense on what is going on. You even if you are politically opposed to past leaders, you acknowledge the existence and the application of international law. You acknowledge the ability to perceive tactical advantage or tactical activity, tactical plans. You can see the necessity of getting Congress to approve any action like the one that Donald Trump undertook over the weekend with just 21% support of the American population, according to the latest polls. So it is almost, that's the first thing to bear in mind. You can't stop trying to make sense of things, but it is almost impossible to do when you are dealing with depravity and or dishonesty. So I don't know whether Netanyahu was lying through his teeth last June when he claimed a historic victory which will stand for generations, or whether he's lying through his teeth now when he claims that this action was necessary because, as they've been saying for about 30 years, Iran was just moments away from a nuclear capability. And the second thing that you have to bear in mind at times like this is the fact that several things can be true at the same time. I think if you begin with those two blocks of understanding, those two bricks of comprehension, it's very hard to get a bead, especially in the early days of an assault like this, when the perpetrators, the protagonists, are so deeply dishonest and depraved. And the second thing that you have to bear in mind is that several things can be true at the same time. So this act is illegal. It is undertaken without congressional approval. It is unjustified by tactics and diplomacy. The real estate moguls that were conducting negotiations with the Iranian regime on Donald Trump's behalf but failed to understand both the intent and the nuance of the Iranian position, and there is no justification for what they have done short of bloodlust and self-interest. But it can also be true, and indeed it is true, that many Iranians, particularly members of the Iranian diaspora, whether they are in other countries by necessity because they are dissidents or refugees or the descendants of refugees, or whether they are in Iran itself, will welcome the killing of the Ayatollah for obvious reasons, a hideous and murderous regime. But it's also true that he was 86 years old, he'd had cancer twice, and an awful lot of experts on the ground cautioned against turning him into a martyr because he was certain to die soon, very soon. Some reports suggest that he didn't seek the sort of security that he could have availed himself of precisely because he felt that his cause would be better served by martyrdom than by squirreling himself away under a mountain somewhere and surviving this attack in the same way that he survived the last one. So several things can be true at the same time. You can't really trust anything that Donald Trump or Benjamin Netanyahu say, and the killing of the Ayatollah will be welcomed by many Iranians. It's a great call. When we talked about the last time they claimed that they'd undertaken a historic victory which will stand for generations, I don't know, maybe in Netanyahu's world 7 or 8 months is several generations. Maybe it's one generation a month if you're signing up to his world view. But I remember taking an extraordinary call when we talked about the last attacks on Tehran from somebody who effectively said that if your children are being held hostage, then you don't care if the person that rescues them is a rapist. It's like a weird moral hierarchy, isn't it? In its purest and most simplistic form, it would be my enemy's enemy is my friend. My enemy's enemy is my friend. I am so keen as a patriotic Iranian to see this regime toppled that I really